The following is intended only for mature audiences. Discretion advised.
All right, so now we're doing issue 18 of The Spawn.
Reflections Part 3 by Grant Morrison and Greg Capullo with Art T-Bear and Dan Panosian, dedicated to Dick Ayers. You know who Dick Ayers is?
A director?
No, he was a Silver Age Marvel artist. I don't know why Dick Ayers, of all people, it's not like he died or anything. I guess maybe he's
really?
No, I mean, he did eventually die, but he did not die this time? Around here. Not this time.
They're calling their shot?
Hey, I think that's more of a shout-out, right? If it's dedicated to, they're dead. If it's a shout-out, and there's
no, I think they're calling their shot.
Dick Ayers is so random, though. He's like the Sergeant Rock artist yet. You know, really?
He got a cool name, though. Dick Ayers.
Kind of a porn name, right?
Yeah, it's like Dick Ayers. How you doing?
So, just a little bit of background. There was a 3.5 month wait before the next issue, regular issue of Spawn, would come out. So, just to tell you, like, where we're at in terms of books being published at the same time as Spawn 18, the Malibu Ultraverse is still going on. Their Genesis line and their Reviewer line are still going. We've got Dark Horse's Comics Greatest World and the Legends imprint. DC has Vertigo and Milestone still going. Marvel's Epic imprint is still around. The Razor line and Marvel UK are still going. Harvey Comics was still trying to put Nemesis out. Their edgy line of books. I don't even think you remember.
Is that the one with the wizard? Or the dragon wizard things? Or Nemesis?
No. You're thinking of Nemesis the Warlock.
That's yeah, Nemesis saying. The Warlock. My bad.
No, Nemesis was like Frank, which was a series they did about Frankenstein in modern times. Twister, which is a book that James Huddle did about a serial killer that stalks other serial killers.
Did you fucking read like everything that came through your shop?
Well, what was cool with Twister is in one of the preview catalogs, I think it was Advanced Comics, they actually bound in a faux newspaper about the serial killer dude. So that's why I remember the Twister.
Correction. Twister was published by Harris Comics. Harvey's Nemesis imprint only published Frank and licenses of Ultraman and Sequest before being shuttered.
So what else was out? You had Valiant, and they were competing with Defiant, which was Jim Shooter's company after Valiant. It's like, he got fired from Marvel, so he formed Valiant. He got fired from Valiant, so then he formed Defiant. And so those two were still going head-to-head with each other. Mirage was still putting out books before they started building out all the Turtle stuff. Calibur was still around at this point. Warp Graphics, the ElfQuest people, they were still around. Prime Boom Publishing at this point.
Especially of independent book. Yeah. Okay.
So what happens in the story, though?
We're continuing our interactions with the anti-Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he's been battling Spawn, and the homeless folks that usually hang out with Spawn are now trying to help Spawn as... Are we still calling him the anti-Spawn at this time, or did he finally...
He's still anti-Spawn. The guy who steps up is a fellow named Dipper, who is a Vietnam vet turned homeless guy, and he keeps saying, you gotta watch out for your buddies. That was the rule that he learned in Vietnam. And so even though he's scared shitless of this anti-Spawn dude, he does step up and give him a whack with a pipe or something, and that's enough of a distraction to buy Spawn a minute to collect himself.
And then, of course, you know, all the homeless men are back there with their weapons of choice. And
well, whatever shit they could pick up in an alleyway, yeah.
It looks like they're going after anti-Spawn. He tells them they don't know what they're facing. I'll tear you apart. That's enough, buddy. Oh, dialogue. Oof.
And this is Morrison.
Really,
there's some bad clipping in here.
Wait, but is this Morrison just cashing a check, Morrison, or... Because this doesn't feel like Animal Man or Doom Patrol. This doesn't feel fucking weird or
We both agreed that the first issue of this three-parter was solid. We were really excited based on that first issue.
But I still think he was showing up because he's like, how much did you pay Alan Moore? How much did you pay?
How much did
you pay Elson?
Did I get $100,000?
Wait, what did they get a little book?
But this is still Grant Morrison pre-JLA. This is like Doom Patrol era Grant Morrison. That dude
does is this before Arkham?
It is post-Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
So he did get that buying a house money.
Okay, so then he his fame was
so,
up
so maybe he was hoping for like 50K, and maybe he didn't get to 50K. I don't know. But the point is, I think what may have happened here is, you remember when Geoff Johns moved from DC to Marvel and he started writing the Avengers?
Yeah, and then he did like The Thing. And
right.
He did all those little one-shots.
There's a story that's perhaps apocryphal where he turned in, I think it's supposed to be in his first script or one of his first scripts for the Avengers when he was doing that title. And I think it went to Tom Brevoort, and basically they took that script and turned it into two issues. And they told him that you're writing too much material for one comic book. You need to you know, we're doing space Depression right now. You need to space it out. And I feel like Grant Morrison wrote one issue of Spawn and he turned it in, and they turned that into one issue of Spawn. And then they took his second script and turned it into a two-issue Spawn where he wrote one issue. Because there's enough content here for you to have a solid two-parter, a decent two-parter at least. You know, you do a setup heavy first part and then an action heavy second part, right?
Okay.
Setup and then the knockout. And it said it's two issues that feel really drug out and way too many pinups and just doesn't feel like it pays off everything they set up in the first issue.
Yeah, true. I agree. I concur. And Spawn, these people are under my protection. It looks like he's about to put a beat down on the anti-Spawn. They start battling, which at this point, anti-Spawn has a cool look.
Yeah.
It looks cool.
I still think he's a paint variant Dr. Fate.
Well, yeah, because the helmet. And I do hate the fact that he has the Spawn emblem with a little cross mark as a belt buckle. It's pretty goofy.
It's silly. Yeah.
That's very 90s.
We touched on
that. It's very 90s. And of course, you know, they go into punchy, punchy, kicky, kicky.
I got to say, one thing I like about Grant Capullo, even though it doesn't make sense because the corpse is supposed to be a white dude, but I like that Capullo, even though he's hamburger head Al Simmons, he does look like a black guy still. You can tell that it's supposed to be a black guy, you know? So I like that about Capullo's take. Maybe he just didn't get the memo that the corpse is supposed to be white, even though Al Simmons is a black man. But I like seeing him look.
So you're saying he looks minority?
Yeah, I think he has black features, even though he's, you know, obviously he's fucked up, but he still looks like a fucked up black dude instead of like a fucked up white boy.
Okay, so as they're battling, Spawn does this, you know, finish him off move where he grabs him by the head, and I guess he does like a angelic blast from the helmet, and then fucking just fist fucks the face out of him.
Yeah. He punches his head through
the... Finish him!
Yeah.
Fatality. And that's pretty cool. I mean, well, I didn't remember that part when I was reading it, where he does that fucking... he does finish him. He does a finishing energy blast from the back.
Two fist energy blast through the chest to, you know, double tap, basically.
And so, and again, this is Jason Wynn.
Well... Jason Wynn is the raw material, but in personality, it's not Jason Wynn. It's a being made up of elemental fire. And again, what happens is they call him back to the heaven satellite. And they're like, we didn't give him enough elemental fire. Give him more fire. And of course, you'll remember the thing that was motivating Anti-Spawn in the first place was he was burning out from all this elemental fire. So they're giving him more fire.
And then, of course, this is where we meet, what's his name?
Now, this is not Cagliostro.
Oh, it's not Cagliostro?
This is another dude that knows Cagliostro. Okay. And gives him a blank card, and Spawn's like, what the hell is this? Like, when you need it, you'll see what's on the card.
Okay.
But this is not Cagliostro. He's apparently part of, like, a secret society, but I don't think they go into too much detail about, you know, who these dudes are yet. Just that they have a way around his bad deal.
Now, I do like the fact that Spawn goes to the military base where...
Simmonsville,
where they had the pit of hell head open, I guess, or...
Right.
Hell portal had manifested, and he just goes to town on it with the...
He takes back his memories. There's a town made up of psychoplasm, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And it was his memories, and he said, like, I'm raising this fucking city to the ground. This is my memories. You don't get to have this.
Yeah, but he shoots the general, like, fucking point blank.
It's Major Vale.
He's not a major.
He's just because he's an old dude don't mean he gets to be a general. Right. But see, this is the problem that I have.
But he looks like General Ross.
He looks like a bunch of stereotypical comic book generals. True. But here's the thing. Right before Spawn shoots him in the eyeball, because it's one of those eye shots, he points out that the dude had committed war crime and Al Simmons remembered him from those war crimes
to validate the murder? Yeah.
No, exactly. That's what it is that we set up that Vale had a connection to Wynn and I think to Simmons, but they did not establish that he was a war criminal. Although, let's be honest, he hangs out with Jason Wynn. Odds are in favor of that. But I think we maybe needed to see that to give us like some, because you can't just tell us, hey, you're a war criminal and shoot him and we're going to get the satisfaction from this guy finally getting his just dessert. I also remember that there was an article, I think it was in Wizard Magazine, or maybe it was in a Hero Illustrated, where these panels, particularly the shot where he shoots the dude in the eyeball, was showing like this increasing amount of violence in comics in general. And I think it might have also been related to Walmart pulling Image from their stock because of the excessive violence.
That makes sense. That is pretty violent.
It is pretty gory. Well, it's like I wanted to put these panels up on our Tumblr feed, but since Tumblr is restricting violence and sexual imagery so severely, I can't get away with it. So maybe I'll throw it out there for the Twitter. Twitter still has no standards. They still have neo-Nazis. But Tumblr, I can't get the shit up on there anymore. Yeah, okay. Twitter still has the porn, yes.
Twitter porn. And so, okay, Al...
Oh, and specifically it was in Ecuador. I just want to throw that out there. Major Vale, war crimes in Ecuador.
Okay. And so apparently the jism plasma, whatever, turns into like this little... little magic ball that Spawn now has with him, and he takes it to Wanda?
Yeah.
And it, I guess it floods her memory. So that the memories come from, it come from her mind?
Spell destroys Simmonsville, but he takes the one place that he still loved, this one memory.
Yeah, that's where they're out on a boat. Yeah.
Yeah, they're out on a boat, and he proposes to Wanda. And he turns that into this ball of memory, takes it to Wanda, and gives it to her so that she's like bawling as she's remembering that memory. And see, that makes no fucking sense to me because A, Wanda's married to another dude. So fuck off, Al. Quit trifling, okay? B, she has her memory. She can remember that shit whenever she wants to. She doesn't need a magic ball.
So are you saying Spawn forced this?
Al, yeah.
He forced himself on her? He forced himself on her?
Yeah, yeah. But also, Al's really amnesiac. Keep that shit for yourself. You let that memory keep you warm at night. You're the fucking corpse who can't be with Wanda. It shouldn't be you giving the memory to Wanda.
No, he didn't give it to her.
Who's married with a child.
Wait, he didn't give it to her. He forced it on her.
It's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little creepy.
It's real fucked up.
It's a little creepy. Yeah.
So, overall thoughts on Reflect. Big disappointment, right?
Yeah. Like, it was a payday.
So much promise. No delivery.
I'm still disappointed with the anti-Spawn being Jason Wynn. I think that was stupid. And I hate the fact that he's the anti-Spawn. He ends up being the Redeemer.
Does that stick, though? I think Jason Wynn comes back at some point, doesn't he?
No, I don't believe so.
I watched the Spawn animated show, right?
Oh, okay.
And most
all
of
three seasons. Okay, I was gonna say all three seasons.
I think I came up like three episodes short. You know, I watched all three seasons. Yeah.
Oh wow. Yeah. Any good?
Haven't you watched it?
No, there's been not since it originally came out.
Okay, there was stuff I liked and stuff I didn't like.
Okay,
but I do think the voice actor who did Jason Wynn was awesome. The animation on Jason Wynn was some of the best animation of the series, and he's prominent throughout the three seasons. So it's just weird to me. It's like, wait, he's not in Spawn anymore? You know what I mean? Because there's a big gap. Like, I read the first year or so of Spawn. I stopped just short of that first year because I didn't read the Chapel issues. I stopped with the Rider series. And then for the most part, I didn't read Spawn again, aside from tossing through it when we'd get the boxes at the comic shop. I didn't read Spawn again until at least the 40s or so, right? And that was like, you know, the strip cover returns. Basically, the book would be so fucking late that I'd rip the cover off of it and ship the unsold copies back to Image, or I'd send the covers back to Image, and then we'd have all the unsold ripped up covers. You're supposed to destroy them. And for the most part, I did. But I did take copies home with me to read in the tub and shit like that. So I was kind of following Spawn again at that point. But there was this big dead zone where I just didn't read Spawn. And so I just assumed Wynn was going to be around some more, and I'm surprised, genuinely surprised that we're not going to see him anymore.
I think I kind of slowly, you know, just wandered off the Spawn trail around 25, 30.
Okay.
And I think I was still picking it up, but I wasn't reading it. It was always at the bottom of my pile every month, to the point where I just started putting it in the box because I wasn't reading it. And then I'm like, why the fuck am I buying this book if I'm not reading it?
Yeah.
And then I didn't start reading again until like other writers came in, like Paul Jenkins and all these other writers that I already enjoyed their work from other books.
Paul Jenkins did one of the side books, right?
Yeah.
He did like Spawn the Undead, I think it was?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that, so I kind of got back into Spawn a little bit, but I never, not like the first year where I was like hardcore reading like every book came out as it hit the stand, but I mean, rereading these, woo.
Yeah. Woo. Okay. I was really looking. You see, it's a real bummer because I really, really, really was looking forward to these Grant Morrison issues. I thought that if anything was going to turn Spawn around, it was going to be Morrison and Capullo on the book. And it really bums me out. I'm sorry, I got to be upfront about that. I'm just, there's so much potential in the concept of anti-Spawn. There's so much potential in what Morrison could do, and it didn't.
I remember after reading the second one, I started feeling Payday vibes coming off of this book. Like, oh yeah, he.
Well, but the alternative too, it could have been that Morrison might have had some badass ideas that would have like revolutionized it, and Todd was like, "Nah, you're not doing that."
But dude, you do not go to Grant Morrison for this kind of stuff.
But Grant
Morrison, for that fucking weird.
Grant Morrison wasn't Grant Morrison in 1993, though. Dude,
he was doing weird shit. Dude, look at Aztec.
I know.
Aztec was weird.
Aztec was 97, dude.
Was it?
No. Yes, he did. He had Animal Man. He had Doom Patrol. He had Arkham Asylum. He had some arcs in Legends of the Dark Knight.
Didn't he do also some Hellblazer?
I don't remember that.
Can't remember.
I don't think so.
He was doing weird stuff too, though. Didn't he do some Swamp Thing?
Maybe around that time. He might have, because him and Mark Miller did a run on Swamp Thing.
Yeah, they did.
I'm not sure if that started at this point yet, though. I'm not sure. So,
because I remember reading their stuff, and it was really fucking weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they had that Simon Beasley type art. It might have been Simon Beasley.
I think Phil Hester was drawing it, actually.
Was it? Yeah, it was like really fucking hardcore British weird art that I was kind of into, and it was kind of weird. And
I've skimmed that. I think you read the whole thing, because you were in that major Miller kick for a while.
Yeah, I can't remember. I read read so much shit at the time, but I remember, I think I like, yeah, like, I want to remember, I vaguely remember like them traveling through a book or something, some weird shit like that. I have to kind of.
Some weird shit like that is.
It sounds very Grant Morrison.
Grant Morrison, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they should have let him go full Morrison on it. Just whip it out, just go full Morrison on it. It would have been so cool, like some fucking weirdness.
But that's one of Todd's big problems. He doesn't let anybody go all out. I think the only person he really let go all out was David Hine, and I'm not sure that was the one to let.
True.
Because there was some stuff in the Hine run that it turned me off. You know, like by the end of Hine's run, I was like not into Spawn again. You know, he got me into Spawn again, and then he got me out of Spawn again. So,
okay.
But we got a long time before we do all that shit. So, okay. So we done with Spawn then? Moving on? Wizard card number one. I believe this is part of the Holofoil series, but they don't have a series on here that I can see. Real name, Pitt. Group affiliation, Creed. Age measured in mental and physical achievements. Height, 7 foot. Weight, 497 pounds. Created and illustrated by Dale Keown. Part of a warlock alien race that specializes in the conquest of planets and the complete genocide of its indigenous life, Pitt is a savage among savages. In one such excursion to the planet Chakra, Pitt murders a young crippled alien. In an attempt to save the young boy's mind, a psychic by the name of Seer blanks out Pitt's mind and transfers the boy's fading consciousness into the murderous alien. Escaping to Earth, Pitt now has to come to terms with what he is and avoid the other aliens of his race who have been sent to bring this deserter home. On the Kiboshometer, he rates 6.5 out of 10, which is odd to me. Seems a little low. In the Blood. Just a quick little rundown of where we're at right now. Okay. So Dale Keown was into like Bronze Age comics, like 70s comics. Gets out of it because he's running around with bands and shit. He gets back into comics because of John Byrne specifically. And he's basically a Byrne clone when he gets started. And you can still see the Byrne. And it's not enough for him to just be a Byrne clone. So some friends get him introduced to Bernie Wrightson. And so he loves Bernie Wrightson. And so he incorporates a ton of Bernie Wrightson influence into his work. And really, if you had to pick two guys that are the most responsible for Dale Keown's artwork, especially in that time period, it would be Byrne and Wrightson. You can see it all over there, right?
Yeah. Especially all the details.
So the band that Dale Keown was in broke up, and he assumed that he would end up in another band, but no band ever showed, but you know, it never manifested. And so he just started drawing, and you know, again, he started doing that work for Aerosol and stuff. And at some point, he caught the attention of Joseph Rubinstein, the inker. And Rubinstein actually tries to get in touch with Aerosol to get them to pass his number to Dale Keown because he's so impressed with his work. And they won't do it. You know, they held off on that for a while, I think, because they knew that Keown was going to be something, and they tried to hold on to him for as long as they could. And apparently, this is the thing that Joseph Rubinstein did. I wasn't aware of this, but he was kind of a talent. He had an eye for talent. He kind of got off on finding the next big thing. He helped get Art Adams started in comics, and he helped get Kevin Maguire started in comics as well.
Wow.
So I've seen Joseph Rubinstein many times at cons. I've gotten stuff from him. So one of these days, I'll walk up to him and just thank him for the eye, you know, getting these guys their breaks. So anyway, Todd McFarlane first starts talking Dale Keown all the way back in 1989. And then Jim Lee starts talking to him in 1991. And they ask him around that time period, do you have any character? Because the rumblings of Images are starting, right? And so he doesn't. He's a guy who just loved drawing the Marvel characters, and he didn't really have any characters of his own that he could turn into an Image book. But he started thinking about things that he liked. He loved the Hulk, of course. He loved Thor. He loved Wolverine, or at least he saw the commercial potential in Wolverine. And so basically, for the most part, Pitt is Hulk plus Wolverine. Plus he mixed in some Calvin and Hobbes, and he loved T2. And so when you think about it and you look at the books, that influence is all over the
place. Oh, yeah. Big
books,
time.
Right?
Big time.
What really lured him away, because he was happy at Marvel, but he was just going to make so much more money at Image that he just couldn't turn down the money. There's just too much money on the table. So I don't want to call it mercenary, but let's be honest. There are guys who took the money on the table, and their lives, the rest of their lives, benefited from doing that. And I think back to guys like Ron Lim and Mark Bagley that stayed at Marvel, and they didn't take the money that was on the table. Cable, and I don't think those guys ever got the opportunities the Image guys got. So I don't begrudge anybody, even if it was motivated by money, from going to Image, because it changed their lives for the most part, especially in that first year. And so, and Dale Keown was intent on staying with Hulk at least for a little while, but he was removed by Marvel ahead of Hulk number 400. They specifically said, no, we don't need your service anymore. Good day. And the truth is, he didn't want to do Hulk 400 because he wanted to go ahead and get started on Pitt, and Marvel were doing a favor by removing him. But if the dumbasses had just kept their fucking mouths shut, they'd have gotten more issues and given Image less ammunition once those books started rolling out and selling a million fucking copies. And apparently Pitt number one did sell about 1 million copies.
Damn.
Yeah. So think about that. Think about how he had to get at least 50 cents to a dollar for each copy of that book, since he got the lion's share of the money, since he wasn't having to pay anybody else for the most part. He did the book himself for the most part. So dude got $1 million.
Damn.
So yeah, that's going to fucking change your life. No shit.
And what year is this?
93.
So that's $1 million in 93.
I haven't done the adjustment, but $1 million a day still ain't
nothing. Probably a good three.
Yeah.
By now standards.
Well, yeah. I don't know that much.
Two and a half?
Enough.
Yeah.
If you draw one issue of a comic book, because that's one issue. Let's say if he sold 500,000 copies of the second issue, that's $1.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, he only got like three issues out that year at best, but you know, that's still a $2 million a year, you'd say, maybe more.
Yeah, that's a fuck you. Fuck you.
That's fuck you money. Well, by comic book standards, certainly.
Yeah.
So of course what he does, as much as he loves drawing comic books, his first love is music. So he takes that money and makes his own studio. And then once he's got his own studio, he fucking loves jamming on his bass and shit. And he calls his buddies over and they're all jamming and they're enjoying themselves. And then shit ain't getting drawn. It's just that simple.
He loved it. Not a strong work ethic.
It's not that he doesn't have a strong work ethic. It's that he's doing what he loves. And what he loves the most is rocking out on his bass. And so he's spending all his time rocking out on his bass.
Paying
and
shit, the bills.
But the bills are paid. $1 million an issue, you're paying a lot of fucking bills.
Yeah, but nah.
You build a studio and you still got money to pay bills. You put that shit in the bank and you can live off the fucking interest, man. Pretty quickly, Image had brought in a bunch of artists. Some of these guys weren't producing, or they weren't producing work that they liked. And a bunch of those guys got fired, essentially. They got cut loose by Image. Dale Keown was like one of the only ones that got brought in that period that was kind of off on his own that didn't get the axe. And so from then on, he just kept waiting for the axe to fall because he knew he couldn't get his shit out on time. He knew these books were taking 4 fucking months per issue. He knows that the Image guys really want these books produced at a faster rate. They want more books. And he's not doing it. So from then on, as soon as they cut those other guys loose, Dale's just waiting for the axe to fall on him as well. And it colors his perceptions of what's going on, and it alters his course. He's also, frankly, he's just burning out. It's a lot of fucking work. He did not understand how hard it was going to be to get a book lettered, to get a book colored, to get fucking printers, all the shit. You know, Hollywood's calling him. They're wanting to cut deals to do skateboard decks and watches and action figures and all this other kind of bullshit. And it takes fucking time to go to all these fucking meetings, to fly out to California, to fly to New York City. So it's not just jamming out in the studio. It's all this other bullshit distractions, you know? So, you know, it completely changes life. In some ways for the better, in some ways for the worse. So you get to Image number 9, Pit number 9. It's the last Image Comics issue. It's released on August the 3rd, 1995. So just keep in mind, we were just talking about Spawn number 18, and that was like 93, maybe 94. So Pit number 9 is almost the end of 1995. It was the first issue with Steve Gerber providing the script. And I know you had issues with Brian Hotton.
Yeah.
So now we've got Steve Gerber on issue number 9. Just to show you where the comic industry is now compared to Spawn number 18, the Malibu Ultraverse has been bought by Marvel. Valiant being purchased by Acclaim is looming. Most of the companies and imprints that launched during the boom are in their last year or so. Pitt was actually shot DreamWorks at one point for a movie. And
it would have been played by Mike Myers.
And Dale Keown's Hollywood manager recommended that Keown publish for himself because he'd make more money than he would at Image, because he'd be getting all the money instead of having to cut a check to Image for the services they rendered. So since Keown thought he was about to get Nixon'd anyway, you know, just like all these other guys got it, he went ahead and self-published. He never wanted to self-publish, but A, his manager said he'd be more money. B, he thought that Image was going to get rid of him anyway, so he figured he'd quit before he got fired. Okay? I personally think that he was never in any danger, because the simple fact that he survived that culling, and the fact that guys like Todd McFarlane, who probably, let's face it, was one of the main guys who probably was cutting people, you know, wanting to say, this guy's bad for Image, let's cut this guy. He was the guy who was quality control. He was the guy who wasn't putting out a ton of books. If anybody was going to say, get rid of dudes, it was probably Todd McFarlane. And Todd fucking loved Dale Keown and thought he's one of the best artists of the generation. So Dale wasn't going anywhere. But Dale thought he was going somewhere, so he fucking quit Image. He started self-publishing. And guess what? Full Bleed didn't do Image Comics then, especially not in 1995. So Dale kind of fucked himself. But he fucked himself because Image put him through a head trip. And because, like a lot of the, I've read this a lot, these dudes who had these satellite companies, these guys that weren't at Extreme or Top Cow or Wildstorm, these guys that weren't connected to one of those big companies, Image just kind of left them alone. And when you're an artistic person and you're insecure and nobody's telling you they love you and nobody's telling you, don't worry, you've always got a place in Image and shit, your mindset is playing tricks on you. You're like, okay, you know, something's not right. These guys don't love me, or these guys aren't talking to me, and you start making bold moves. And that's what happened to Cleone. That's the whole reason why Full Bleed gets started. But guess what? When you're having to publish for yourself, all the shit Image used to do for him, he's got to do for himself, and it just makes him even more late. Puts even more pressure on. It gives him even more burnout. The dude was going through a lot at this point in time. So before we dive into the Dale Keown stuff, let's look at Pit One Half, which was the first Full Bleed Studios release. It's dated December 1995. It reprinted the Extra Image Presents story from Youngblood number 4, and then it has a brand new loop story, A Nice Girl Like You by Richard Pate. They make a mention in the story too that the name Loop, it was actually a nickname the DEA gave her because she was suspected of using trained wolves to kill her competing drug dealer. You and I both know that it's actually because she is a werewolf.
Yes.
So what happens in her story?
If I remember correctly, she wakes up in a... This is after what takes place when...
In the previous Pit story arc, he punched her through the chest.
Yeah.
And she appeared to die. And so this story starts out with her in the New York City morgue. The DEA is being kept out of the loop on her death. Agents Mulder and Scully from the X-Files, not officially named, but they're obviously the likeness, are coming in.
Well, definitely Scully.
No, both of them. That's clearly... That's Californication Man right there. That's David Duchovny. They leave the coroners to their own devices. The story, even though they say at the front it's called Loop Story, they also do that thing where they blow up the tech and make it clear the story should actually be called A Nice Girl Like You. The coroners are kind of leering at this corpse. It reminds me of those stories.
Way.
Well, remember the stories about Return of the Living Dead where they were researching it and they went to some mortuaries to see, you know, how it goes? And you know the story, right?
Nope.
Okay, so as the filmmakers are leaving to their car, somebody from the mortuary at one of the places they're looking at runs out to them and whispers to them, you know they're doing stuff with these bodies at night, right? You know these guys are doing shit with these bodies at night. Yeah, no shit. So the coroners in this comic maybe share that particular predilection. A little necrophilia is inferred here.
Oh, so we're getting the origins of Lupe.
I know. I want to call her Lupe, too. I think she's supposed to be Loop, but I want to make her Lupe.
Yeah, I call her Lupe. I'm assuming this is during
But they didn't have no Lupes in London 1738.
Well, I thought this... at the time, I thought I was reading that it was like the Spanish Inquisition or something.
I know, right? And see, look, here's the thing that's funny about the date. I don't know why they pulled 1730 out of their ass. The last recorded execution for witchcraft was in 1682. And in the UK, or I don't know if it was actually the UK yet. I think we'll just call it England. They had the Act of 1735 that made the prosecution of witchcraft a case of fraud only. Nobody getting executed for fraud. So there were no witch finders in 1730. Their chronology is fine.
I just think, I honestly, when I was reading this, I really thought it was the Spanish Inquisition.
It feels that way.
And Lupe is thrown...
Everybody expected the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah. Inquisition. What a show. Da-da-da-da. I've been wanting to watch that movie for some reason. So anyway, so Lupe's in the prison and there's a elderly woman in there with her that's talking her up a little bit, talking about how she is a witch. Because Lupe's trying to say, I'm not a witch.
She's not a witch.
Yeah, she's not.
The witch finder, who's pretty much like the ones from the old Hammer movies, he admits that he knew that she wasn't a witch. He got a confession out of her through torture, but he feels that if she's weak enough to lie, she's weak enough to die and go to hell.
Yeah.
So he's going to save her soul by killing her the devil gets her since she's so weak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
bullshit misogynist motherfucker.
So basically what happens is when they throw her in this prison to wait for her execution, she's actually in there with a real witch.
Just a witch though.
But a werewolf witch, I guess.
Werewitch, yeah.
A werewitch who attacks her. The witch finder and his men try to get in
there.
She's
so hungry.
Yeah.
So she's particularly,
but she was pretty weak though, because I mean, she got her ass handed to her. Like, they take down the werewitch pretty fast.
Well, the witch finder's got silver daggers that he got from his dad, who was also apparently a witch finder. So,
but how would they have known to use silver against her?
Because fucking werewolves apparently running around.
Yeah. So anyway, the old woman is, you know, wounded. She's attacking him. He hits her one more time with a giant, I guess, a silver dagger. And that's a cool effect where she kind of fades into bones.
Oh, you know what? I think I was wrong. I think what happened is the witchfinder's dad actually got the silver from witches that he killed.
Oh, okay.
This is irony.
Irony?
This is irony, yeah.
And so they think they've defeated the werewitch.
Well, they did.
Go in there.
They killed the
shit. Well, yeah, they did. But they go in there and they find Lupe and they think Lupe's, you know, they're checking her to see if she's injured, and Lupe morphs into a werewolf.
Well, again, the witchfinder lets it slip that he knows that she's not a witch, and it pisses her off because he's like, bitch, you're going to die anyway. And she's like, no, bitch, you're going back.
And then she attacks and kills him, at which point they're...
And again, she's a big purple werewolf. So you got to give credit. I I can't think of any other big purple werewolves anywhere. But I do agree with you. Weren't you the one who said last time that she looked like the monster from the Twilight Zone segment?
I think so.
Yeah. Because it's not just the werewolf. She's all like
deformed. You want to see something scary?
No, that was just a blue face Dan Aykroyd. That's, I'm talking about during the... the wishing him into the cornfield. Remember the kid is making all these weird monsters and stuff? Because he can't. He warps from reality. And at one point...
He makes the Tasmanian devil.
Right. I think she...
Yeah, that's right. He goes, that's off, folks. And like, holy shit. Yeah, that one scared the living shit out of me.
Yeah, she kind of looks like the Tasmanian devil from Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that kind of deformed creature. And
I just got to say, I think Lupe's design is way better than Zoivod's.
Yeah, she looks cooler. Though this looks really fucking weird, like the art style. Del Keown didn't draw this, right?
No, that was Richard Pace. Richard Pace wrote and drew that.
Okay. So she's battling, and she does have a cool design.
Okay, hold on. But you didn't tell what's going on, because we're no longer in 1730.
Okay, so we're back where they're basically about to dissect Lupe's body to see what happened to her. She wakes up, morphs into her giant purple wolf thing, and starts to rip through them. One of the coroner's attacks her with a saw. She dodges it. She gets him. She bites his head off. She lets one guy survive.
With
a broken arm. But did she turn him?
She says, you're lucky. I usually break heart.
Yeah, but did she turn him or not?
Did she bite him or did she just... I think she just broke his arm with her claws, right? Yeah, she didn't bite his...
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought she had bitten him.
No, she's just breaking his arm. Now, I think I have a hard time believing she'd leave him alive knowing that she's a werewolf. So I think she probably did ultimately kill him, but if she did kill him, it was off screen.
Yeah.
So what'd you think of that one?
Yeah.
What do you think of Lupe as a villain?
Really? She's not very... I mean... The motivation... I feel like I've read this origins for another character somewhere else.
I don't know. I kind of like it. I like it. I like that... Here's the problem I have. I've already mentioned my issues with Zoivod. He's kind of got the whole Carnage Venomy thing going on. The werewolf... I guess maybe you could argue maybe Wendigo if you're looking for like a Hulk/Wolverine villains. But I just think chick from, you know, medieval Europe who turns into a giant purple werewolf and now she's a modern day drug dealer. It's like, I think that's pretty unique enough. By image standards, it's pretty fucking unique.
Well, no, isn't that in one of the fucking Howling movies?
Look, dude, if you're referencing the Howling is a pretty deep dive when it comes to fandoms, okay? This isn't like Nightmare on Elm Street and shit. How many people do you really think has actually watched more than one Howling movie, if any?
I'm just saying,
we're children of the 80s. I can say I've watched at least 4 Howling movies, but I'm pretty much in a motherfucking minority. Even among horror fans, Howling is some bottom trolling piece of shit.
Nobody
was.
She looks just like the werewolves from Howling. I remember seeing her and I'm thinking, oh, that's the werewolf from Howling. What, when they show up at the end and they're howling at the moon.
Not as much as when Bill Sienkiewicz literally drew the werewolf from Howling when he revised Werewolf by Night. So okay. No, she's definitely more unique looking than that. So.
Okay.
I like Lupe. I think that she's, for me, I think she's more the most interesting of Pitt's villains because neither the Hulk nor as much Wolverine. A little bit Wolverine.
Hold on. So
because you also had the Howler at Night, or what was that thing that from the Sylvester run? The werewolf dude from like the 30s when Larry Hama and Mark Sylvester refers to in Wolverine. The thing at night or the Howler at night or something like that. It's a little like but
let's look at this. Okay, because let's be honest. The Pitt is based off the Hulk. So which of these villains or which of Hulk's rogue gallery would she close resemblance? Which is Wendigo.
And Wendigo's a different thing. Wendigo's look is a lot different. Motivation's different. Attitude's different. She's very conscious of what she's doing.
Didn't he fight also like a werewolf creature? I want to say he's fought a werewolf creature.
Yes, but not regular. I think maybe like toward the end of Purvey's run, right? Or maybe one of the... No, that was Mr. Hyde in the Sam Keith issue. I think toward the end of Purvey's run, he fought a werewolf one time. But that does not make an anti... Like, well, Lupe fights Pitt a bunch... several times. Relative to Pitt, given how few adventures Pitt had, she fought him multiple times. So I think she's much more relevant to Pitt than any werewolf type things would have been to the Hulk. Nobody thinks, oh yeah, Hulk versus werewolves. That's such a Hulk thing to do. Nah, dude, nah. Even Wendigo's kind of a reach. I mean, how often does Hulk really fight Wendigo? Everybody remembers Wendigo because that's when Wolverine got introduced.
Well, he also beat the fuck out of Sasquatch. I mean, she's kind of Sasquatchy.
No. Only to the degree they're both werepeople. I think that's pain.
Because reading the Pitt stuff, like, I now realize that group of heroes, Axion or what is
it? Yeah, Axiom. Axiom Enterprises.
That is absolutely the fucking Pantheon.
I was
reading, I'm like, oh my God, it's the Pantheon. Like, and he's not even hiding it anymore. It's kind of like, well, I couldn't come up with ideas on Pantheon.
But okay, so here's the thing. Okay. Before we even get into the synopses, I want to kind of confront you with something right quick. Okay, look, you love the Hulk.
Yes.
You love Del Keown's artwork.
Yes.
You love Del Keown drawing the Hulk.
I own it, yes.
Yes. You bought the run of Pitt as it was coming out. Is that
yes.
correct? Yes. Okay. Now,
I read it at the time? No.
I thought when we were going into this three-part series, we were going to have three issues by Grant Morrison and Greg Capullo that were going to be rad, and we're going to have the three badass episodes on Del Keown's Pitt, and we were going to be fucking positive. Because when we started Spawnometer, we made a point of trying to be positive going into these Image books. I cut shit where I was too negative out of those episodes, and maybe one of these days we'll explore the more dark stuff. But people responded well to us being so positive about the Image books since they've been slagged on for so fucking long. Then John came along and started doing all the pouches, and he's way more positive than we could ever be about Image, because he genuinely loves those comic books. I think he just didn't really love comics in general, but he genuinely loves talking about the Image comics, you know, issue by issue, right? And my hope was, even if we couldn't enjoy the actual comics themselves, we could at least get off on the premises, we could get off on the chutzpah, we could get off on how beautiful, because you gotta, the Del Keown artwork in these books are fucking stunning. Come on.
A little bit hit and miss. There's some times where he's just...
Dude, relative to actual... like
there's No. There's some times where he is on his A game, and there's some times where it's just fucking thrown.
Some of the best art the dude ever produced was on these Pitt comic books. From the inking to the coloring, they're fucking great looking. And any...
Some of the early issues, yeah. No, once we get into the... After nine of them, the artwork dude, takes
those,
some hits.
Those
he's
books,
rushing them, especially when he's full bleed.
It's a little looser. It's a little rougher. I have to say that in this time period, as much as Del Keown wanted to ink his own stuff, the issues that where other people inked him tended to be stronger. And surprisingly, given what a simulator he is, maybe it's just maybe I don't know if Del Keown laid down the law or if he just had so much respect for what Del Keown was doing that he didn't assimilate him. But I think the Joseph Rubinstein inked issue is probably the best fucking artwork possibly Del Keown ever did in this time period. Today, he does covers that are so phenomenal that I'm not sure you compare his sequential art to the spot illustrations because they're so fucking good. But in terms of like sequential art, in terms of telling the comic book story, I don't know if anybody ever got inked him as well as Joseph Rubinstein did. But he actually did get Mark Farmer to do some of the issues, and those look fucking great. The only guy I'm not too keen on inking him was Dan Panosian. I don't think that quite worked. But everybody else, you know, this shit looks fucking great, man. And as much as I enjoy the Hulk issues had some issues too, you know, no pun intended. It wasn't always 100%. He had some not so great issues, and he missed a lot of fucking months too. You may remember Bill Jaska kept filling in for him, and other people kept filling in for him. He couldn't keep up with the schedule, and so yeah, you're going to do stronger work if all you're having to do is draw the book and you're still not getting it out on a monthly basis. But I still think this book looks fucking phenomenal. These are still essentially Hulk stories, so why are you so fucking down on them, dude?
I'm not down on them. I just feel like these are carbon copies of the Hulk story.
But
I've read
so
the Hulk
what?
Writing.
It's carbon you're getting basically Hulk stories,
but they're not as good. Like, you need that Peter David touch to really pump it up, punch it up.
And here's another thing I want to talk to you about. Guess what? You know who Del Keown asked to write Pitt? Peter David. And guess what? Peter David turned his ass down. He didn't want to do Hulk stories at Image, or maybe it was another situation where he didn't think he could work at Image because of the animosity.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of factors.
There's a very good chance that Image would have vetoed Peter David.
I think he didn't want to repeat the Hulk stories that he'd already done. Like, he was going forward, and if he started with Pitt, you're going to have two characters are almost the same, and then you got to write two different stories. Like, there's going to...
I get that. Well, I'm sure that what Keon was saying goes, leave Marvel... come to Image, I'll pay you more. And I don't think Peter David was interested. And I do think there's a lot of other...
Should have asked him that when we had
him. I think there was a lot of other politics too. I don't think that Peter David would have felt welcome. I'm not sure that Image wouldn't have vetoed that shit. They might have fucking cut Keown loose early.
Just because
of that. Todd fucking hates Peter David.
Yeah.
Todd hates Peter David. Eric Larson hates Peter David. Yeah. So I'm not sure that was even an option. And I think a lot of it too is Peter David agreeing with you. I don't think Peter David was interested in going to Image and writing Hulk stories for Image when he could write Hulk stories for
Marvel. Yeah.
Okay. And that's fine. That's a fair.
Because even near the end of his run. I love the Hulk, but even at the end of Peter David's run, the stories, you know, there was very little left in the tank. Right. Like, they really,
It was time. It was time.
Yeah. I don't enjoy those last few.
No argument. But the fact is, it's not Del Keown's fault that he kept wanting to do Hulk stories. And Marvel fired him, and he was making a ton more money for doing Hulk stories under the name Pitt.
I like the Pitt. I just think he should. should have really gone in a different direction. It feels a little lazy. Like, I'm just going to draw on stuff like stuff I've already done, but I'm just going to put a new coat of paint on it.
It's such some fucking claws. Pretty paint, dude.
Yeah, I fell for that shit in my early years where I bought pretty art with shitty stories. And I can't, guess what? Those books are in my fucking box, like holding other shit up. I don't care about those. Then I have books that are great writing with decent art. Those are my prize books on the shelf that I enjoyed to go back to. You're the one that taught me that writers were important. I bought art for bullshit reasons. I love Del Keown's artwork. I own some of it. I do love his style. I do like the Pit. I think Pit's a cool concept. It's just never been fleshed out. Like, and I agree. It's all over the place. Like,
I do think that a writer could have gotten in there and done stronger material. But I also think that I think it's the best book that Del Keown could put together under those circumstances. And it's just, I don't think it's fair to be so hard. I'm more harder on
like Layfield Sylvester. I think I'm harder on them. Del Keown, I mean the artwork is good. There's sometimes it's great.
The art is fucking great.
There's sometimes it
the
dips.
The coloring is fucking
it goes
great.
Up and down. He has his obsession with dogs.
But I love that pit bull, man.
He has this obsession with chains all over pit all the time. And
chains
this,
in, man.
This weird thing about like he's connected to Timmy and Timmy's kind of a psycho killer sometimes, but when he mutes out, but then he turns normal, and then there's all these monsters coming out.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay, but
actually, let's go ahead and get the synopsis in. Okay,
but that's even in there. Now, okay, this is great artwork.
Well,
yes.
Well, okay, before you get into nine, though, we still got to cover. Okay, the In the Blood one shot, still by Richard Pace, who did the Lupe story. What happens in the Blood?
Which one is that one?
The one right there.
Oh, that one, dude. That was a fucking mess, dude. I don't know. He seems, because I read him out of order.
Yeah,
I kind of fucked up there because I read 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and then I went back. That's why I had to ask you. Where does this fall? Because
I sent you a text telling you to read it first. You didn't read. You didn't.
But you
read half the 3-6 issues here at Max Palace. You know.
But I'll be honest with you. When I was reading these books, I for some reason keep thinking when it turns into Full Bleed, that's the like almost like the reboot. So I didn't realize it was still connected to the original.
And that's what threw me off into the reboot. Yeah. So I'll tell you what. I'll summarize In the Blood.
Okay.
Save you a little trouble. Okay. So you've got it's written and drawn by Richard Pace. So obviously the art style is much different from Del Keown. Richard Pace, more like, he doesn't draw like Neil Adams, but he's in that vein. You know, he's in that kind of Continuity Studios mold. He's more exaggerated. He's more like a Tex Sierra or a Mark Beecham. He's not as good as them, but I think by indie standards, he's solid. I actually enjoy his art fairly well. He's, you know, comparing him to Del Keown, that's not right. That's not fair. And he's really not quite up to the stronger Marvel DC stuff. But in this time period, Marvel DC had some fucking ugly comic books. So compared to that, it's some pretty decent looking stuff. I like the art personally. I think if you can't get Del Keown and you can't get a name, he did solid enough work. I enjoy, you know, he doesn't turn me off to look at his books. So anyway, so in the Blood, I think was sort of like a soft re-entry since it was like one of the first Full Bleed books. If you hadn't been reading it at Image, which let's face it, anybody who's reading Pit at Full Bleed was already reading at Image. But they will go ahead, they give you like a light recap of Pit 1 through 10. They talk about how the police were unable to analyze the magenta fluid found at the scene of the motorcycle gang rumble from issue number 1.
Okay.
You know, which is of course Pit's blood. They turned over that substance to Biochem Health, who brought in Crossbow Technology. The company's called Crossbow. It's not that they had technology based on Crossbow. And so they Crossbow Technology is intended to capture and contain the pit creature, whatever this creature is. So they reference Axiom Enterprises too, so that they're in play as well. And so that's when they introduce the Doctor's Gilly, which they don't, and I don't know if they cover this in the later issues because someone read the later issues of Pit, but I don't know why they pluralize them and they refer to the Doctor's Gilly as they, when it's an individual codenamed Think Tank who's a dude in a suit with a giant brain.
The leader.
And more specifically, it's not the leader from the Silver Age who has the big, tall, green head.
Yeah.
It's the Todd McFarlane leader that's all pale yellow.
He has like the
jaundiced
and
lumpy.
No, he has the broccoli head, kind of like the two giant lobes type thing.
He's kind of got an elephant man head, but he's got a normal face.
But he's the fucking leader. Yeah.
Okay. And he's got close-cropped hair that's like little, like tiny little jagged.
Some kind of
hair.
Weird metal brace that's keeping his head up.
A neck brace, I think. Because his head's so big and swole that he needs a brace.
Because he's the leader. Yeah. Yes.
So this guy, I think, runs Crossbow Technology. technology, I think is the company that he runs. And so they decide they're going to send some outdated technology against Pitt because they know that he's in the, what is it, Connecticut or New Hampshire? Where's he at?
Connecticut.
Connecticut. They know he's in the Connecticut area, so they send this outdated machinery, an M3 armadillo battle suit, and an M12 jackrabbit robot. And so they man of these things is a Delta-class psychic. I don't know what a Delta-class psychic is, but it's somebody with psychic powers running this robot. The psychic actually tries to do a telepathic or psychic attack against Pitt, and Pitt is able to reverse that psychic attack back at the dude and basically melt his brain and make him like have nosebleeds, like gushing nosebleeds and shit. So for once, they've referenced this multiple times in the Pitt comics now, where how he's able to latch on to the aggression and send it back at the aggressor, and they never made it clear what the fuck that meant, but apparently, for instance, he can reverse a psychic attack against somebody, so we have some idea what that means now. I don't know that Pitt necessarily has psychic powers, but he can
shoot the powers back at somebody eventually.
So the dude ends up going having a grand mal a seizure and goes into a coma. Because of that, because they don't want to risk him being questioned, they trigger an explosive device in his brain, and the suits at crossbow cavalry note, oh, it's too bad, that guy was a new father, you know. It's like, so we know that these guys are some evil dicks. They start training the next group of people to go after Pitt in this VR practice mode, and they're prepping an overwhelming response of alpha beta psychics and dozens of upgraded battle suits plus support vehicles to go after Pitt and really do the job. One of the people at crossbow/biochem health is like, my mom lives in Connecticut, and Think Tank is like, look, either have your mom move, or if you don't really like her that much, pay for life insurance because Connecticut may not be here for very much longer. Really fucked up Cavalier shit. I know that you didn't like In the Blood. I thought it was fine, but now we can go into Pitt number 9. This was the first issue that had a script by Steve Gerber, inks by Billy Chan for about half the issue. The other half is Mark Farmer, who had inked him on Hulk.
We get the story of Pitt's origins, or his parents.
Jerob, the child of Future Light, reveals the truth to Pitt.
That he had a twin brother. Him and Timmy are twins.
Well, okay. Anne and Alan Bracken were kidnapped, alien abducted by Zoivod. Zoivod takes the embryo out of Pitt's mom and makes Pitt. I don't know if he does it on purpose or if he misses it, but the other embryo, the other twin embryo, goes back to Earth with Pitt's parents and becomes Timmy.
Okay.
So Timmy and Pitt are sort of kind of twins.
So you're telling me Pitt would, if he was human, would look like Timmy?
Presumably. I mean, they were twins. Yeah, I mean, not all twins are identical. I actually think aren't identical twins.
So, wait, are you saying we have a Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger thing going on here?
I didn't catch that. You may be onto something there, actually.
Yeah. So Pitt's Arnold and Danny's...
Timmy's all the shit that was left over.
But he's the smart one and Pitt's the dumb one, kind of like Arnold.
Pitt's not dumb, though, dude. Pitt's actually fairly bright.
He
hangs out in the woods with a pit bull and shit, but he speaks in complete... He's smarter than the Hulk was most of the time.
Not smart Hulk. Not smart Hulk. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So...
Pitt's not dumb. He can talk.
Well, dude, he buries a head that comes out of the ground and fucking attacks and almost kills him.
Okay. So this is the head of one of the bounty hunters that came after him in the early issue, and it's got basically a booby trap that goes after him.
At this point, Timmy's getting picked on at school.
Did we mention that the pit bull that the hunters had let loose in the early issues is now like his pet and hangs out with him and shit? Yeah, okay.
And I guess Timmy's getting picked on because he's smart or he's...
God damn. Okay, so Timmy's all dead-eyed from having had Jerob in his body for a while there, and it kind of fucked him up. And then Jerob leaves, and he's just sort of like this zombie who's making his way to school.
Well, no, but he's fucking smart as shit, though.
He's smart, yeah.
Because they're literally talking about space, and he's like, Alpha Centauri is 4.3 light years away.
That's true.
Unless you count the... So you're all right, throwing your little fucking fits over there. I'm like, I remember that.
But he's also like fucking like dead-eyed.
He's on Rayman mode right now. He's like, you know.
Fair. Yeah,
definitely whopping there. You know, like he's been, you know, he's brain drained. But again, you're right. He's a little dead-eyed, but he's...
And also, the dog is who dug up the severed head.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Pitt's fault. It was his pet.
But why would he bury the fucking head there?
Why wouldn't you bury the head? Because you don't want it...
A trophy?
You don't want crossbow...
What is it, like a serial killer trophy and shit? Like he's keeping trophies around?
No, he probably buried the whole body and the dog just dug up the head.
Oh, man. He probably got trophies and shit.
No, he did... Okay, whatever. Yeah, he decapitated the dude. So you're going to bury the body and you're going to bury the head, you know? It's not...
But so I'm assuming that because Jared or whatever it was in the kid, and not the sandwich
maker. Let's not bring up Jared and kids, okay? That's not a good place for us to go.
But I guess he kind of evolved Timmy's mind a little bit, because
he's definitely been altered.
Yeah, because Timmy starts getting powers and shit.
But alternately, you know, I don't know. Maybe Zoivod fucked up some shit for Timmy, or maybe the reason why.
No, because he starts turning into the Gerb kid like later on when he morphs.
But okay, Zoivod comes to Earth and kidnaps his specific parents because his mom is the one. She's like, for some reason, there's something about that chick that makes her particularly valuable amongst all of humanity. That's the one chick that he picks, or that his scientists pick.
So are you saying one of them is Jesus?
I'm saying
the chosen
that
one?
Maybe both Neo? Of those embryos had something special going on with them, and maybe Jerob being inside to me unlocked something in him that was already there. It may not have been that Jerob left anything in him. It might be that he opened up something in Timmy.
So is this
that
like,
doesn't sound good in the context of Jerob. Jerob
no,
either, does it?
No, no. But I was going to say, are you saying like the pit could be in the vein of the bloodline of Jesus Christ?
It's got nothing to do with no Jesus.
I'm just saying.
And I'm the guy who usually docks some kind of Jesus
I'm just saying, you know.
But I'm not talking about Messiah shit. I'm just saying there must have been something special about
his mom. Getting some Dan Brown vibes here, man. We're like, it's the bloodline of Jesus, and Zoloff opens up the blood of Jesus, and Timmy turns into like a Christ figure.
I don't know no Jesus shit.
Okay, I'm just saying, man. See, I'm writing a damn good book for Dale. Fuck, see? All the potential was there. All he gave you was the tip. That's all he gave you. Go ahead. So, Timmy's been morphed. He's getting picked on at school. At this point, the severed head attacks Pit and beats the shit out of him, so that's not good. It also explodes, which Timmy, by this time, you're starting to realize they have a psychic link.
Yeah, because that's something I think that Jerob tells him, is that he keeps following Timmy around because they've been connected this whole time because they're twinsies.
And so, and of the blood of Christ. And so,
the identical twin?
No, I'm saying they're the bloodline of Christ. Kind of like, what is that movie that, with the Dan Brown movie that came out?
Da Vinci Code.
There you go.
They ain't no twins.
I'm just saying.
It's a trinity, right?
I'm just saying. The trinity.
There ain't no trinity. It's two.
Jerob, Timmy, and Pit. The trinity. Anyway, back to, so the Pit. Pit survives the explosion. He attacks.
Actually, somehow. There's a little something to that, because he's sort of like a holy ghost, right?
Yeah.
Okay, go away.
Wait. I'm franking you real slow.
Yeah, it's just your Catholicism. But
I'm a poor man's Frank.
I'm giving you a little bit of credit, because I can see where you would make that connection, even though no sane person would.
What? Wow. Just because I don't... or you're going to scream, call me a Nazi in a minute? Jesus. So the thing blows up. Pit survives. I don't know how Grandpa keeps surviving all this shit, too, because he's always like in the wrong place at the right time. But
I think he must be one of those young olds. He's like 45 and he just looks like he's in his 80s.
Pit's there. Of course, Pit survives the explosion. I don't know if the dog survived, because did the dog survive?
I think the dog lives.
Did you?
You don't kill the dog, man. People will turn on your ass when you kill a dog.
Well, but at this point, Timmy's starting to use his psychic powers at school, though.
Yeah, kill all the Timmys you want to, but don't kill the dog.
Okay, well, but Timmy's using his psychic powers, and I guess...
Yeah, he was getting bullied, and he finally, like, snapped Harry style. Yeah, I know, another pop culture reference. And he starts TKing the fucking...
That's your last one, motherfucker. That's your last one for this podcast.
No, that's the Okion. That's not me. That's not you. That's the Okion.
I still think this is the blood of Christ working through him. But anyway, so he's using his psychic powers, but he got this evil look through him. He has, like, this evil look in him.
His hands do this, like, skeleton shit. They play with creepy kid stuff. Yeah. There's definitely some... what's that fucking one? The remake had Christopher Reeve in it, but it's the Village of the Damned, right? It was with the creepy albino kids with the telepathic powers or telekinetic powers.
What is it they chant over and over?
They chant?
I thought they did, didn't they?
Man, I haven't seen that
movie since like the 80s. Well, yeah, but he has this creepy vibe. His eyes turn white.
He does the evil grin.
He does the evil
grin. He always good with evil grins, too.
No, I mean, honestly, he's really good with faces.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fuck it. I can't think of an artist that match him.
Very.
Yes. They're all distinctive. Well, every person has a very distinctive look.
Yeah.
No one ever looks like someone else in that book, which I got to give them. That's just phenomenal.
And again, because of the rights and influence, you always tend to go to a horror place. That's the way he renders people, makes them scary, makes them creepy.
And so,
but also when the kid starts glowing white and you can see his skeleton,
he goes fully like, Holy Ghost.
He's like X-ray.
He goes full Holy Ghost. He looks kind of skeletorish.
Oh, you know, was there a UFO that did that?
Yeah. Well, no. Okay, you're thinking of the issue where the UFOs attacked the Hulk, and I can't remember which one is blasting the Hulk.
The one time
Okion
drew the UFOs, yeah.
Yeah, but he's blasting the Hulk, and it's burning off the Hulk's flesh.
UFOs? Yes. I thought that was the alien dude.
It was the UFOs, and I always wanted that page. I love that page, because it's just the Hulk marching toward him, and like flesh
but again,
is burning off.
Dale Keown drew that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of Dale Keown's to take with him when he left, you know, in the divorce. Some community property there.
Okay, if you want to bullshit your way out of that one, go ahead. So at the end, we get a glimpse of
Hulk's
the dark, evil Timmy and the Pit. Pit's a little bit, I guess, so Timmy's psychic powers. I don't know, because Pit, gets blocking people. He's blocking people with psychic powers. So I'm assuming he has some psychic ability to protect him from Timmy's attacks.
They're brothers, maybe so. Yeah. But also that lends credence to, well, they both had Jerb in them too. So it's not right either. So Jerb may have been responsible for that in some fashion too. I thought that issue number 9 was perhaps the best written issue of Pit. I didn't have the problems with Brian Houghton's scripts that you had. I thought they were nice and fun and breezy, and yeah, they the plots weren't all that great, but I thought it was fine. You know, I think it was decent, you know, mid-range comic booking, right? But the Gerber bringing this Bronze Age purple prose, especially the early parts with Jerob, I thought you really got a sense of those like 70s Marvel horror titles. You know, it felt like a Man-Thing comic or a Werewolf by Night or something with Morbius. You got this sense of portent that Pitt had lacked before. And so I really wish Steve Gerber had stayed a little bit longer on Pitt, because I really do think that it just, in terms of just craft, that was the best written issue of Pitt. The plot wasn't that much deeper than any other issue of Pitt, but I thought that the captions, the narration, the dialogue in general was just better.
I liked the direction they were going. They just didn't follow through with it.
Because Steve Gerber only writes a few pages of the next issue, and then he's gone. And,
if they had gone full horror, I think, honestly, if Pitt had gone full horror comic,
which is something you can't really do with Hulk. And so
had gone full horror, dude, he would have stood out. I think he would have outpaced Spawn, because Spawn was supposed to be the horror book, and it turned into more of like this weird supernatural heaven and hell.
That's another fucking thing too. Okay,
where you have werewolves in this,
but you're talking about dudes who do horror well. You know, one guy I think who does horror fairly well is Paul Jenkins, for instance.
Yes,
and Jenkins did have a run on Hellblazer. Once again, Del Keown asked Paul Jenkins to write Pitt, and Paul Jenkins said, why don't we just do a crossover with the Darkness? I can write Pitt in the context of a Darkness story, so I don't have to do a bunch of research on Pitt. So once again, Del Keown reaches out to a quality writer to help him live his best life. And once again, this writer's like, nah, pass. I'll just, you know, throw Pitt into the shit that I'm already writing. Keown can't catch a fucking break.
Let's look at what's always the common denominator in this stories of writers dealing with Dale. Is there something maybe with Dale that we don't know about that was not working out?
Are you saying it's a Dale problem?
I could be. I mean, you get a lot of money like that.
I don't know. Do you get
fuck you money? No, you become a fuck you kind of guy.
Or maybe he wasn't throwing enough money at them. Or maybe he didn't sell himself.
I just find it hard that these guys would be like, well, I don't want to write your comic.
But if
you come up with one more story where like, by the way, did you know Alan Moore almost wrote a fucking Pitt issue? And Alan Moore was like, you know what? There's not enough weird, spacey, naked women in for him. Then I'd be like, okay, it's all Dale. It's all Dale all night.
I want to get you to a positive place, because just picture if one of these guys, just one of these guys had stayed yes and stuck with it, how cool Pitt could have been.
I think
the potential was still there.
I think Dale should have been like, okay, y'all don't want to do it, let me do something weird, let me look at what everybody's doing at Image, okay, let me make Pitt a horror book. Mm-hmm. and it's a dark horror, a lot of blood. I mean, I'm already slashing, I'm killing, let's take out the alien portion of it because that's getting kind of goofy. I already got a werewolf.
I think the science fantasy was also helping to differentiate with the Hulk.
At the end of the day,
Hulk still comes back to superheroes.
True.
It had been sci-fi, horror.
But what you do is you bring in the horror, you bring in zombies, you bring in demons, you bring in vampires, and even the space stuff. And that would have made him interesting, because it's a horror book. He's a monster amongst monsters. Is he worse? Is he better for mankind? I mean, who knows? You could play with it a bit more. Right now, it's just kind of like we're just bopping around like, well, I'm fighting my evil space dad, Dark Vador, and I got a twin brother and we might be the bloodline of Christ, and like, it's just, there's not like a lot of direction. I like these books. Again, the artwork is great.
They're throwing a lot of shit at the wall, I admit.
And they're waiting to see what sticks, and that's what they're gonna go with.
I don't even know it's about waiting to see what sticks. I think it's just like, what are we gonna do with this issue? Let's do, because
then you got fucking the Pantheon
I think it's closer to the story of John Carpenter writing Halloween 2, where he does Halloween and he does a few other movies that end up ultimately becoming cult favorites, but in their day are big commercial flop. And so they say, here's a whole bunch of money, go do Halloween 2. And as much as he doesn't want to do Halloween 2, he can't leave the money on the table.
Season of the Witch.
Just like Keown did. No, not Season of the Witch. Halloween 2 is The Return of Michael Myers.
Okay.
Or not, there was actually one called The Return of Michael Myers, but it, you know, the second part of the first Halloween story, right, with Michael Myers. And so my understanding is he knocked that out as quickly as he could. He had a bottle of a good hardcore liquor, and he had just seen Empire Strikes Back. And that's how he ended up with Laurie Strode being Michael Myers' sister, because he just had to fucking bang the shit Get Out. And he had to throw in all the gore from that was featured in all the movies that ripped off the Halloween because the gore was popular and nobody knew what the fuck to do because he never intended to continue this fucking story. It was never supposed to be a continuing story, right? So I think that's sort of like what happened with Del Keown, is that he's going to do his Hulk Wolverine mashup. The money's on the table. Marvel's fired his ass anyway. Got to get this thing out. Everybody wants him to get this thing out. Struggling month after month to figure out what the fuck to do with this thing. And so, hey, I saw Terminator 2 last night. I'm going to do a Terminator 2 sequence. Hey, I saw this movie last night. I'm going to do this sequence because, you know, I got to get this fucking thing done and nobody will fucking help me get this done. So I think that's part of it. I think it's not so much, you know, see what sticks. It's get me through this issue.
I'll give you that. So in this issue,
we got four whole pages of Gerber's script.
Yeah.
Del Keown's first issue writing it entirely on his own.
Well, this one, Timmy goes full, where'd he go?
Firestarter.
Yeah, just
Harry.
Batshit crazy. And again, he's beating up Pitt with like a fucking hockey stick and shit, which was kind of weird.
He's employing elementary Chakran metaphysics, Chakran being the Jerobs people, the dead people, I think. They got genocided. And he's basically drawn Pitt into his mind, and they're having a psychic battle, a la every third
episode. So that makes sense why Pitt, the size difference. I remember that was when I was first reading this, was bothering me. I'm like, wait, is Pitt now the same size as him? Like, I remember thinking that was really weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, you're right. They're battling inside the mind.
And he's got claws, and he's got hockey sticks that can do damage to Pitt. And it's basically like, it's like a Freddy Krueger thing.
Oh, absolutely. Dream Warriors. Here we go. They're battling, and he's about to beat the shit out of Pitt. And then all of a sudden, Zemo comes shooting out of Pitt and attacks Timmy. And Timmy and them are going back and forth. And of course, I thought it was kind of cool the whole time this is going on. They're both like frozen in front of everybody.
Yeah, everybody's just seeing them like in a trance. Yeah, that's all going on in their minds.
I thought that was kind of cool. And then of course, Timmy kind of blacks out. The Pitt runs away. I guess Timmy's still what, angry?
Yeah, he's mad because he wants the truth of what's going on from Pitt. He doesn't know. And it's in this year that he finally finds out what happened with his parents and what his relationship to Pitt is.
Pitt lands in a pond and just kind of, I'm assuming, takes a quick bath. The dog, you're right, the dog survived. Here comes the dog running. Oh no, it's another dog.
No, that's the same. Isn't that the same dog?
No, it's a different. Oh shit, it's another book. No, because there's another hunter chasing after that dog.
No, the same hunter goes after his dog. He's pissed off that the dog ran alpha and he's trying to kill the dog. And Pitt's like, my dog now, fuck off.
Okay, so that's a little weird. Pitt's walking around covered in chains and blue jeans and apparently boots. Yeah, apparently boots as well. The same kids that were picking on Timmy earlier.
Is that the bullies?
I believe so.
I didn't catch that. Yeah, it makes sense though. He's got that angry bully face.
Yeah.
So they're at arcade. They're at getting arcade. Angry at the games, yeah.
And this guy, I guess, is trying to find Timmy.
Mysterious, like spook, government agent looking
creepy
dude.
Creepy guy, yeah.
Sunglasses and shit. And then, trench coat, that kind of shit.
There's this guy that wants to give those two kids a lift.
Wee-hoo.
Yeah, very, also named very, Jared. Very Kincaid, Billy Kincaid feel
Kincaid,
to it.
Billy Kincaid, yeah. Callback.
And so Pitt is now checking on Timmy. Grandpa tells him to fuck off, pretty much. So Pitt's
I think he offers him the barn, and Pitt's like, fuck you, I sleep where I want.
Yeah, I'm going in the woods. I'm going to go sit in the rain in the woods and get hit by electricity, apparently, all night. And as he gets struck by electricity, that's when this, I guess, like a hunter comes out. It's one of the guys that was chasing after Pitt originally.
Yeah, it's the dude with the scarred face.
Yeah, but he's in like
Quag,
this weird...
Quag, the lieutenant of Roth. First of his name. Yeah, who failed to contain Pitt in the earliest issues, and now he's back in this giant, like, Porcupine Man suit.
Yeah, Porcupine Guy, yeah, from Marvel books.
So we go to Pitt number 11 with inks by Dan Panosian.
So let me guess, Goober, whatever, wrote what, four pages then?
Four pages. The best four pages. The part about elementary shock and metaphysics was totally Steve Gerber, yeah.
So 11 starts off with, is this kind of like the origins of Pitt?
Yep.
That's why I asked you earlier.
Yeah, so basically the way that Quag, whatever the hell you call him, is able to subdue Pitt is that he shoots him with a memory gun. It basically restores a bunch of Pitt's lost memories because he was, like many Image characters, an amnesiac. Which is an Image cliche, I'm afraid, because Spawn's an amnesiac, Savage Dragon's an amnesiac.
Oh shit, I never put that together.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them.
Were any of the Youngbloods?
Not off the top of my head. No, I don't think that any.
What about Supreme?
Maybe Die Hard.
Oh yeah, Die Hard. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Supreme?
I don't think he had amnesia. I think he was just fucked.
A dick? You
know? Definitely a dick. Big dick. Quag shoots
him. Max?
Was Max? Max? I didn't read a lot of Max.
He's batshit crazy.
That's right. He never knows where he's at,
if he's in real.
He's got memory gaps too. That's right.
Holy shit, is that like the running like gag in there? Like all our characters don't know who the fuck they are.
We haven't figured out the backstory yet, so we all have amnesia. Yep.
Wait, there has to be one more. If there's one more, dude, we win the lotto. Like, there's the Max.
I'm sure there's another one. Does Pitt? Lori have any memory?
Pitt.
Well, there you go, Pitt, yeah. So he's shoots him with a memory gun. And so Pitt is overloaded with lost memories from his childhood. And that's what subdues him, at least temporarily. So what's...
Well, he's kind of remembering when he was in this containment, when they were traveling with him. And Pitt doesn't look Pittish yet. He's
Pitt, baby, yeah, he'll do the same for you.
Yeah, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of hairless.
And your world looks kind of weird and you wish that you weren't there. Just close your eyes and make believe and you can be anywhere. I love adventure. I love romance and I'm all bad.
Wow. Fuck it.
You don't love
adventure. Wait, how many hours? You? Wait, how many hours have you slept? I just want to throw that out.
You know the Muppet Babies theme, right?
No, but no? You terrify the fuck out of me right now. And you start going in a voice. If you start arguing with yourself in a moment without me on a mic, I'm really fucking concerned, man. Apparently there's an alien form.
Pitt's a test tube baby, and we sing like baby Pitt, who's basically like a small bald version of Pitt with like super deformed Roberto Ramos giant hands and feet.
Yeah, but like don't they talk about how the Creed race, and every time I hear Creed, I keep hearing the sound
with arms wide open.
Yeah, I keep hearing that shit every time. Oh god, it's fucking horrible. Anyway,
what's this life for?
Oh god, why did you call him Creed, you bastard? What's his life for? Oh my god. Anyway,
shout out Scott.
So anyway, Creed is singing along, and apparently they every time they conquer alien races, they put them to work.
Yeah they're imperialists.
Yeah, so
well they're genociders too, because what they do, they annex these races and they work them to death and take all
they the tariff the hell out of them,
and then if they yeah sort of like that. Yeah.
And so the aliens are basically, I guess, taking care of Pitt. Definitely the Greys, with the gray skin and the big eyes.
It's one of the races that the Creed have enslaved, and they're the gray
the
aliens.
The geneticists. The classic
alien abduction, yeah. Gray aliens, basically, except a little goofier looking, are their scientists, and they make this test tube baby for Zoivod. That's baby, you know, kind of toddler. I'd say toddler Pitt is basically where we're at.
So is Zoivod like a different type of race besides these? Like,
he's got something going on. Yeah, he does not look like Creed at all.
Yeah, because the Creed look kind of...
Pitt is half human and half human.
And he looks more like a tad of Zoloff on top.
He really doesn't look anything like Zoivod, except for the claws, I guess, and maybe the teeth.
But he talks about his DNA's
in him as well. Like Roth, at least, is all like obsidian, so that looks more like Zoivod. Creed is basically one of the... Pitt is basically one of the Creed, but just, you know, with somewhat deformed features in the claws. That's the main thing that separates him, the fangs. Otherwise, he looks like one of the Creed.
Okay. Well, they show up and they think they're going to take him out because it's just a harmless little Pitt.
Because the Creed are already warriors, and there's a whole group of warriors going after... The Pitt escapes from his test tube, and he's running around the station like an alien from the Aliens movies. And
actually kind of looks like a brood.
He does look like a brood. It's true. In the face.
The big red eyes, the big teeth.
Sure. Yeah. Very slavering.
Brooded. Yeah.
Yeah. He just rips the shit out of the breed. Yeah.
And then they blast them.
Because, you know, they kind of look like Jim Starlin's breed a little bit, too.
Oh, that's... Yeah, a little bit.
Starlin-esque characters, anyway. But is this where the dude Quad gets his face ripped off?
Well, they shoot him. They think they kill him. He walks up. Pitt takes a chunk of his face. The other guys look up.
What's fucking me up, I know now, because I've actually written a Who's Who style synopsis of these stories. And because he's not called Pitt yet, I refer to him as the half-breed over and over again. And that's why I keep wanting to call him Breed.
Now he's not Pitt yet. I have Cher in my head.
Yeah.
Half breed.
But he's not Pitt yet. The hybrid.
He's Cher. So Cher is angry and she's just whipping ass. She's cutting through him. What's his name survives? The dude in the porcupine suit. Yeah.
Quag.
What's his name?
Quag Quam. Quagg.
Quam. Now Pitt does look pretty badass, you know, being all hairless and shit.
He's a cool looking kid.
Yeah,
you know, he's a scary motherfucker.
Definitely punk. He's punk. But
he's a little more Wolverine as a kid than he is.
Very Wolverine. Just giant claws, a little short guy.
Yeah,
and he gets knocked out by, I guess, one of his brothers, one of the other surviving.
Roth catches his ass and guts him.
And he's what, one of the surviving, because they've had many trials and only few survive.
I think Roth is like the only one that they'd had survive.
Besides Pitt,
so
but
far.
Well, yeah, well, Roth, because Roth is just straight Creed and Zoloff, and this one is human.
Right.
He's a three-way hybrid. He's kind of a mixture, so they're kind of surprised he survived, and Roth thinks, well, that's... nothing. I got him.
Hey, I'm the prince. You know? Yeah, I'm the only prince.
I'm not next in line.
We're going to dump your corpse somewhere so they never, and they're going to burn the labs and nobody's going to ever know you ever. There's going to be another one of the failures.
And then Pitt wakes up and just fucking puts a beating on that ass again.
He's got the Wolverine healing factor, yes. He's able to, he's actually literally comes back from an apparent physical death to rip up these motherfuckers.
But I guess, what's his name?
So in the modern day, Quag thinks that he's got one over on Pitt, but then Pitt recovers, except that Pitt no longer has his conscious mind. He's in full Wolverine Berserker mode and just rips Quag to shreds. So apparently, even though it looks like Quag's died a few times now, this time looks like for sure
he's done.
He's done this time, yeah.
What's his life for? And so that's issue 11.
Not here anymore.
That was issue
11. I don't settle no goddamn score. This one goes out to Delvin. Dedicated to Delvin.
Okay. So now we're at pit 12. Now the cover's fantastic.
I mean, okay, look, Delvin's defending Nickelback, but if you're going to defend Nickelback, you're going to be fucking ride or die with Creed.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm going to ride or die with Creed. So,
so pit number 12 is great almost cover. Entirely done by Keown. He does the inks. I think the only thing he doesn't do is the coloring, right?
And the story.
No, he does the story, doesn't he?
Not much of one. Because come on.
Okay, don't.
Oh, don't be me. Okay. Whatever, dude. This is fucking Doomsday's Origins.
It's fucking Doomsday's Origin, yes. So tell
I literally had to ask you which came out first because I was reading this. I'm like, huh, I've read this before. Huh, who does he kind of look like now? Fucking Doomsday?
Swig of Scott. All right, god damn it. Michael Myers and Stoder's brother and sister. Pound this typewriter. Yeah. It's Doomsday's Origin.
Yeah, I mean, he lands on the planet. There's a bunch of failed experiments, and I'm just waiting for him like to die, come back. Die, come back. Die, come back. Get stronger.
And
stronger, faster.
I don't think they ever completely finished the origin, so I don't know that that's
probably
not
went
what
that route.
Happen. But he only dies the one time that we see. But obviously, there's a whole mound of other dead, a failed experience.
Yeah.
And they're all dumped in this pit on this lifeless planet that's got spikes all over everything.
Kind of like the planet that Doomsday landed on.
And it's so spiky that even Pitt's struggling to get around and survive on this thing.
And at this point, okay, so if him and Timmy, him and Timmy were taken out at the same time, Timmy's what, 10 years old, maybe?
I think he's 9 at this point.
Okay, so we're saying Pitt is probably what at this time, 7 or 8 years old?
They're twins. So
same age.
About 9 years old.
Brutal, man. Brutal.
Man, little Hercules got nothing on him, I gotta tell you.
I was like, fuck. So Pitt just finished off.
How big is that motherfucker gonna get when he's full grown? You know?
Well, okay, so we go back and the dog is now scratching at the door of Timmy's house. I believe Pitt told him to keep the dog in the house because he wants him to take care of the dog.
Grandpa's
throwing a fit about it. And Timmy seems cool with this shit.
He likes dog. Boys like dog.
And then we're reintroduced to the fucking pantheon of, I mean, axion of this world, this chick.
Yeah.
What's her name? Detective.
Kyrie. Bobby Chase.
Yeah. There you go. Bobby Chase Siron and the dinosaur dude.
Yeah.
That's the group, right?
So Axiom hack Think Tanks Computers. And one thing I thought was weird is even though they give like Crossbow Industries and all the other names in the blood.
Yeah.
From here on, they act like the entire organization is just called Think Tank. So they hack Think Tank's computers for footage of Pitt taken from In the Blood. I think they literally stat in some panels from the comic book, which looks weird, contrasting Richard Pace's art with Dale Keown's artwork.
Yeah, it does look weird. The coloring's weird. And then all of a sudden, so Pitt's kind of flying in the air. He gets struck by a laser, lands on a farm as this guy comes out of a porta can, lands in the porta can, and these robots appear.
It's 6 M15 upgrades, completely remote tracker killer. So,
or big giant robot. And they start attacking Pitt. Pitt's going up against
them. These are the dudes that they were hard selling. We're going to blow up all of Connecticut in the blood.
Okay. Oh, because these were the ones?
Yeah. But again, Pitt's in full berserker mode, so he starts tearing ass on these motherfuckers still.
And at this time, what's her name again?
We flash back over to Bobby with Axiom.
And
we find out that, that girl that we didn't know who the fuck she was in the earlier issues because they never identified her, she's the daughter of Professor Holdsworth. And I think that her code name is Envy. And she and Soros are going to investigate Think Tank Lab to see what they're doing with these giant robots that they keep sending against Pitt. So it's very convenient that Axiom decides to investigate these dudes as Pitt's actually fighting them.
They find some kind of signal, don't they?
Yeah, I think they're tracking a signal Pitt's being attacked back to Think Tank.
And so they're tracking it while Pitt's fighting these giant robots. And these robots are acting kind of weird.
Like, very aggressive.
Yeah.
Weird. Like, they've got a PlayStation. What is the What is the...
When they show up, they find two kids thinking they're playing a game in VR.
Axiom Trace... Yeah.
Yeah,
they're
doing.
They're going Pacific Rim with these kids controlling the mech. So that's why the dude was hunting kids in arcades in the previous issue.
Yeah.
Because they're using them as pilots for these robots.
And so these kids don't
kids
even...
kids just think it's a game. They have no idea what
so they don't realize... So they actually want to smash the farmer
they won't have to
win
explode,
the game.
You know, they won't have to explode their brains if they lose the fight this way, I guess.
And so luckily, right before they kill the farmer...
And by the way, I was just about to give Keon credit for anticipating Pacific Rim with this, but then I remembered that I think Ender's Game was already out, so this...
No, actually, I'm thinking Robot Jocks.
Robot Jocks too, but also Ender's Game. Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game.
Oh, sure, yeah. Out then I remember going to see Robot Jocks in the theater and being fucking...
Because even Robot Jocks were still adult pilots.
Yeah,
so
true.
So these are kid pilots, so yeah, it's totally...
Ender's Games, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Soros tears a cable that disconnects them, and the kids are... The group decides they're going to... Envy takes the kids back to the parents.
Yeah, we don't get to blow up Connecticut because Soros unplugged the VR robots.
And the leader's like, it's all right.
Think tank.
Anyway, the leader's like, excellent.
By the way, we should point out, too, that he's always got a hot chick with sunglasses who doesn't talk hanging out with him. I don't know how relevant that's going to be.
She's going to be like a clone or some weird shit.
I don't know. I've flipped through some of the later issues.
Really?
Some shit like that. Yeah.
And then at the end of this book, Pitt's brother. What's his name?
So vile. So raw. And really, besides being the black version of Pitt and the bald version of Pitt, the other major difference is he consistently wears boots, where Pitt sometimes runs around with his little claw-toed feet. Oh, and this happens in the northwest coast of Canada. So finally, Dale Keon's starting to own his Canadianness, Canuckiness.
His Canuckiness? Okay, so now we're on issue 13.
Yes, by Keon again, naturally.
So on this one, so this is where the brothers fight.
Well, and we also get a flashback to when Kite blew Roth 3 miles from the battle site, which successfully KO'd him. So technically, Kite won the battle with Roth.
Okay, and got frozen in snow. And
Yeah, he was temporarily incapacitated by Kite.
Yeah. And I guess he's hunting Pitt, but can he sense Pitt? Because
he smells him or some shit like that. What I thought was funny is he runs into that polar bear, and the polar bear is all like sniffy and stuff. And then he goes and screams with his big claw, with his big fangs, brah! So I guess that's one thing they anticipated, the overusage of the term brah.
Brah. Brah.
Brah.
And so they're tracking Pitt as Pitt's jumping around town. I guess they're trying to capture him, or... I guess Pitt and his brother are drawn to each other, aren't they?
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah.
Although you'd think that Pitt would have detected Roth when... Well, maybe because Timmy. Maybe Timmy was screwing with his brother radar. So wait, so just because of all the half-brotherness, Roth is Pitt's brother, but he's not Timmy's brother.
Yes, because Timmy and Pitt are brothers from the line of the blood of Jesus Christ.
I'm familiar with these family dynamics.
Okay. We gotta branch out this family tree. We gotta get it out there. So Pitt's fighting his brother, half brother, and Axion decides they're gonna capture Pitt. They hit him with a tractor beam, very Star Trek-ish.
Yeah, they're able to track Pitt using think tanks, discarded technology.
Okay. So that's right. Whenever they took those kids out for that base.
Yeah.
And so his brother, as they're trying to get, I guess they're trying to keep Pitt from them fighting each other.
Because they're gonna blow some shit up. Because they're both crazy berserkers right now. Yeah.
And so I did like this one scene where Pitt's stuck in a tractor beam and his brother jumps in there with him, and they're both battling. And the Axion team goes, we keep trying to pull them apart, but now all we've done is created a cage match for them because they can't get out of the cage. I thought it was kind of cool. And they're just going at each other, biting each other, slashing each other.
Pitt's losing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, he has 3 claws through his gut.
Given how much Pitt has just not had a challenge for the most part over the course of this series, it is interesting to note that once again, very much like the Wolverine-Sabretooth dynamic, Sabretooth is dominating Wolverine, a.k.a. Pitt.
So Axion tries to separate them. That one character, I guess his name is Kite, blasts them. Pitt gets knocked away. The half-brother is now tearing at the ship. The ship's about to crash now with the rest of the Axion team in there. It does crash. Pitt's in the ice. His brother comes crashing down on top of him. But again, all of a sudden we see Zoloff inside of Pitt's eyes.
Zoloff.
Sees him in his eyes. Axion is getting their team together. Of course, Pitt's half-brother, which is what, Roth?
Yep.
Roth is kind of going to kill everybody because he's tired of the humans interrupting his
final
hunt.
Battle with his brother. Yeah.
And he rips off Kite's arms.
He has mechanical arms.
Okay.
Yeah. And he just straight up owns everybody. So also sort of an allusion to Doomsday, given how Doomsday wrecked shop all over the Justice League, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Good point. And all of a sudden, Roth's about to attack, and then he hears his name, and it's Pit, but now Pit mixed with Zyloft.
Yeah, Zoivod revealed that he's been inside of Pit. Yeah, he tortured and employed Quag after learning of Roth's plan to overthrow him. So basically, the reason why he didn't kill Quag, whatever, was because he knew that Roth was coming for him. And so he smuggled himself into Pit. I assume that besides giving the memory implant, that was probably where Zoivod was also inserted into Pit. And now the combination is going to hopefully kill Roth so that he no longer has any challengers to the throne. But then Zoivod and Roth teleport away and leave Pit behind. So yeah. I don't even know why that whole thing played out the way that it did. If Zoivod were just going to run off with
that
Roth
made
anyway.
No sense.
Yeah.
And so that is the issue 13. Let's see. We got one
so
more.
So aren't you glad? Yeah, we're on issue 14, the last issue we're going to recap.
Okay. So 14. Oh, yeah. This one with the green aliens. So this one was, I was a little confused.
Now, this one was co-plotted and scripted by Richard Pate.
Okay.
And I just want to throw this out there. Issue number 10 of Pit came out January 1996. Issue number 11, May. Issue number 12, December. 13 is March 1997. 14 is June. Nearly 2 years to get six issues out. The Malibu Ultraverse is no more. Milestone's gone. Comics Greatest World's gone. 2099's gone. The Avengers are going through the crossing.
And is Wizard still around?
We're on our way to Heroes Reborn. You know, this is how long the Pit series has taken. Stormwatch is already going through their Change Your Die Art, you know, which sets up the coming of the second volume of Stormwatch and then The Authority. Spawn's on issue 62.
Holy at this shit. Point,
okay. So one thing that I think is really
interesting. So a tad late.
Yeah. But here's the thing. After establishing how many years it's taken to get to this point, what I love about this issue is it firmly establishes that the entire Pit series up to this point has reached November 3rd of 1992. The entire series has taken place over a span of a few months. We see Grandpa Bracken wearing a Ross Perot button. And Timmy asks, what kind of school is an electoral college?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember when I read that. And
Grandpa says, the kind of school that fails America every 4 years. So Grandpa's a fucking pro guy.
I can't believe that's not on a t-shirt somewhere right now, dude. I cannot believe that's not on a t-shirt or a fucking red cap somewhere.
I just want to know where fucking... Because again, you know, we've talked about this in the... I don't know if we've ever talked about this on a podcast, but there's a strong conservative streak in metal music. You know, heavy metal rockers, 80s, tended to skew right wing. The 1980s was very good for conservatism. And so I'm really wondering where Del Chione is on the political spectrum if he's putting those fucking harsh words into the mouth of Grandpa Bracken. I don't know if Grandpa is the author proxy or if he's setting something up for the future, but I just found that very interesting. But I also just really love that Keown's just owning that all this shit is happening in 1992, 5 fucking years ago at this point.
Yeah, interesting. We're introduced to a race of aliens that were able to hold back the Creed, which I guess made them badasses.
They're green dinosaur dudes. Yeah, like green lizard dudes, like alligator dudes or some shit.
And they're the only race to ever push back on the Creed, where the Creed could not dominate them.
Ectotherons, I think, is what they're called.
Okay. Now, who is that that's battling them, though? Is that Pit?
See, it's a being in gold and like iron armor who's never unmasked. I think it's Pit before he becomes possessed by Jared. But because we never see him under the armor, I cannot tell you for certain that that is Pit.
Yeah. But he's really big, though.
I think it's inferred.
Maybe that is Pit. What? Because the hair?
Does he have hair?
Yeah, he has hair. He has like a big old ponytail.
Well, then that doesn't look like Roth, then, if he's got ponytail sticking like out of his armor. Pit's totally the kind of dude that would have his ponytail stick out of his armor.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very samurai. And so they're showing him battle these aliens. Their aliens are battling back to the point where whoever this is actually has to escape because he's getting his ass handed to him.
I think that the armor, don't they refer to that as Zerith?
I think so, somewhere.
Okay, so maybe that's a whole other kid or something.
I think I'm feeling Pit. I'm thinking it's Pit.
I'm feeling Pit too, but maybe there's something to the Zerith thing. I don't know. They don't make it clear that this dude even survives this battle.
No, he does. He jumps on a cord and they fly him away.
Okay.
Like they're in the battle. He's getting his ass stomped at one point.
Well, because it's one against like hundreds.
Yeah. And he at one point he kind of goes berserker mode, but it's not enough to take everyone out. So he jumps, grabs on a cable and they fly away. And then the next thing you know, Pit's laying in a chair, in a gurney getting worked on by Axiom. They're saying that he's dreaming, but they're not sure what what's going on. Of course, that's when your political joke comes in with Grandpa. And Timmy's feeling, I guess now Timmy has the ability to teleport.
Or they teleport him. I'm not sure about
that. No, he teleports himself. Yeah, because he does it again.
Why does he teleport himself, though?
I think he's trying to find Pit.
Okay.
Because he can feel Pit.
Oh, because they're not in the same place. That's right. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Because they transition from Axiom to the... And I'm so used to Grandpa and Timmy being with Axiom that it's like, oh, yeah.
He goes, Santa Maria, Manama, Chinaman, and then morphs and teleports to wherever Pit's at. The Stegosaurus dude's trying to give flowers to the guy, Kike, for having his arms ripped off.
He's in the hospital. Yeah.
And just at that moment, they see this like little, this Terminator ball kind of form in front of them.
It's straight up out of the Terminator movies. Yeah.
It's a teleport ball and it pops and it's a dragon woman. And she's from some dimension, the Cherubites or some Terabytes.
Look, she is part of that Saurian race that was fighting.
That's right. You're right. Because they're like religious zealots, right?
They're basically an analog for Islamic peoples.
Yeah. Oh, I did not know that. I just know they said that they're very zealot about their ancestors.
I think that what they're inferring is that the creed or the British Imperials.
You got a problem with my Jesus link, but you're also going to go to British and Muslims and shit with this?
Their assembly of expert analog are called Cenobite, which again is unfortunate because we all know that Cenobites are from Clive Barker's Hellraiser.
Yes.
But also
Chatterbox.
The wizened elders of this people are the Cenobite. They declare Makar against the breed, which is basically their equivalent of Jihad. They've essentially decided that they're not going to stop fighting until they've killed every single motherfucking last one of the creed. So it's a holy war for these dudes. And it's also,
Jesus analogy doesn't sound so far-fetched anymore, does it, my friend?
It could be like a crusader thing if you want to go there. Mm-hmm. It would definitely be the cat of nine tails version of Jesus if it's that kind of thing. And they also establish in the story that as a culture, the creed have no honor. So like that...
They don't have a word for honor or hope or happiness or pussy or anything like that.
They will fucking, okay, I'm losing this fight. I'm going to run away and I'll find some underhanded way to kill your fucking ass. Which again, I think is kind of lends itself toward the British imperialist analog there.
So anyway, Western
society in general is viewed as being without honor and being without scruples. And I think that kind of plays into that.
Well, she shows up.
So again, I'm really wanting to know where Del Kion was going with a lot of this weird political
shit. Shows up and she has now been excommunicated from her.
She's a nihilist, right?
I don't know. I know she says she got kicked out.
No, I'm saying she a nihilist. Like she dragon or she Hulk. That's a nihilist. But
absolutely, she's a nihilist. Absolutely, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. She's definitely a nihilist. Even got the same color scheme with the purple and shit.
Purple and green, yeah.
And of course, this is where Timmy shows up and he's going all fucking Skeletor and shit like that, teleporting in and he's like attacking her.
X-ray lad, yeah.
He's using his psychic powers and.
Oh, by the way, the chick's name is again. This is unfortunate. Uriel, Euriael.
I know that's an angel, right?
I believe it is. She is a former first Cenobite of the Olothor Necropolis.
But she turns out to be one of Pitt's friends, though.
Yeah.
Because Timmy shows up and Timmy's like, I'm going to kill you. And then everybody's going to leave me the fuck alone. And I'm going all crazy, cray. And Pitt shows up and tells him, like, to chill the fuck out.
Yeah, Uriel has faith in Pitt, probably because of Jareb. And so she went rogue from the Cenobites and was.
And saved Pitt.
She successfully masked the presence of the Kree from the Ectotheron stop the war. Because Pitt's been detected, he's drawn this destruction force to Earth. The Ectotherons, they're just going to take out the whole planet Earth so long as they can detect Pitt there.
Okay.
So Pitt agrees to hide in shimmer space until they move on. And Timmy protests, nobody stays, nobody loves me.
Wah, wah, wah.
So how does it end?
With Pitt and floating and I'm assuming like a limbo type universe?
Yeah, shimmer space, yeah.
And the negative zone, we might say?
She a nihilist, yeah, makes sense. But at least that's a deeper cut than Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Yeah. And then at the end, dun dun dun.
End.
The end.
With a period. No, not even an ellipsis. That end, period.
Period. We're done with Pit 14. So that's where you tell me, be nice. It was okay.
I just want to say that everybody should have their own superhero.
Hey, everybody and got their own opinion. Pitt is the shit on it too.
So don't shit on the people of Connecticut's only superhero. Name another superhero from Connecticut. That's the one they got.
The Canuck.
That's all they got.
A white Wolverine or some shit like that from that area.
Connecticut?
Like
you know, that is in the United States. You're aware that Connecticut is in the United States.
I'm sure like fucking somebody from the Alpha Flight. I'm sure it's from that, you know, Sasquatch or what's his name? Snowbird or. or Puck.
These are all Canadians. Are they? From Connecticut is in the United States, dude.
There has to be somebody from there, man.
Is Connecticut even connected to Canada? It's not. It's not. It's not. There's none of this fucking like.
They probably moved across the border.
It's not like Michigan where there's a Great Lake and then you're in Canada. They're not even fucking contingent to one another.
I'm sure like Squirrel Girl or some bullshit like this from Connecticut. Nah, you can't challenge that, can you?
I'm afraid I don't know where Squirrel Girl is from. You got me there.
I frank you back, my friend.
So we've touched on most everything I wanted to over the course of the discussion. I just want to point out that there's a very high probability that Pitt will never be collected.
I have the first trade.
No, I mean, okay, they actually collected two trades.
Yeah, I was going to say, I own the trades.
But I mean, like an omnibus or any further collections in the future? Because Del Keown...
If a video game comes out or a movie or an anime movie.
No. Del Keown, basically, he's like, I don't know where that shit's at. It's in storage somewhere. I don't want to go through it. I don't give a shit. So we're probably not going to get any...
No. He says that because the check's not big enough yet. When you add enough zeros, he'll be like, oh, I remember now.
Well, okay, so you think a check's coming?
I just watched Brightburn. So like... I liked it. I loved it. Me and Fryhole loved it. I think right now is the time for a dark, gritty horror movie like Pitt could be made.
Because we're not
even a movie. It don't even have to be a feature. An animated movie, I think, would work.
Yeah, I think there's enough raw material. I don't want a cartoon. I want a live action. But I think there's enough raw material in Pitt. And the simple fact that we're never going to get a fucking Hulk movie appearing.
Yeah.
Give me my fucking Pitt movie then.
I'm telling you, I just saw the trailer for a Swamp Thing, and it's a horror movie. Or a horror show. I fucking love that. I can't wait to watch it.
So even after all the shit you've given Pitt over the course of these three episodes, you still want to see him in live action, though? You still think that'd be a fucking badass movie, right?
I watched Godzilla, man.
How was that?
It's Godzilla. Like, two big gaijus beating the shit out of each other.
So,
like,
good version of that or bad version of that?
Too much human talky-talky for my taste, okay. But for the most part, I enjoyed it.
Not as good as Skull Island, though.
No. Skull Island is fucking phenomenal. Dude, fucking love that one.
I love Skull Island.
I love Skull Island.
Tangent. Okay. Back to Pitt. So, you want to see a Pitt movie, then? You want to see all this stuff?
I think there's enough fine writers out there that Del Keown can say, here's my character, here's what I thought he should have gone, and they're going to be like, that's nice, we're going to do a reboot, let's do this the right way. And I think they could come up with something cool.
I don't think you're going to get any Pitt comics, dude. I think
It's
movie or bust.
No, it's going to be a movie, a game, something like that. They might do a comic where if they do some bullshit, we're like, oh, we're going to swap artists and writers, and so Del Keown's comic is going to be drawn by, you know, some fucking somebody else, and Robert Kirkman's going to write the story, and it's going to sell
Robert Kirkman? Surely Robert Kirkman could go to Del Keown and go, hey, let me do something with your character, and Keown be like, please, go ahead.
Yeah. I think right now...
I don't think Kirkman cares about... I mean, I know Kirkman cares about Image Comics. I know he does.
Well, he's a big boss now there.
Right. He's one of the partners now.
Yeah.
But I don't think he wants to, like, do a Pitt comic when he could do his own comic book.
There's going to be a point where it becomes kind of nostalgic, and someone's going to want to go back. Right now, people are still, you know, they got their rosy glasses on for the 80s.
No.
Early 90s.
No, they're in the 90s.
Dude, I'm seeing a lot of... Honestly, I think Stranger Things, shit like that, Godzilla, all this shit is from the 80s. People are really still harping on that. 90s, whenever Rocko's Modern Life and all that shit starts coming back real hard, okay. Like, I think... Dude, that dude with the pockets, like, you know, he's a lone voice, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like him, like, yeah, I want to see another Pitt comic. I want to see what they can do with Pitt now. Now, I hope they don't make him fucking happy, fun, sunshine time or some bullshit like that.
Absolutely,
it has to go straight dark.
You know, they always want to go dark with shit, and you're always like, pull it back, Pitt. No, dark.
No. You start the first issue, you walk into the room, and there's Timmy's severed head on the ground. And you're like, what the fuck happened here? And then we go from there. What?
Kind of boiler, huh?
No, that's how you start it. How do we get to where Timmy's severed head is on the ground and his body's missing?
I think you have Timmy severing a head. I think that's a more interesting way of going about that one.
Nah, you got Timmy dead. No, Grandpa's head severed on the ground. Timmy's missing.
High five.
That's how you start it.
Yeah.
I think...
Nobody stays. Everybody leaves me. Yeah.
Fucking Timmy goes all jack-o'-lantern and shit, like digs out their skulls and puts fucking candles in their heads where their faces are lit.
John Carpenter takes a swig of scotch, says Timmy kills his family.
I think, and
this is why I'm rooting for
because
this is why I want Spawn to succeed, because I want my Pitt movie and I want all.
Spawn is kind of already played out. He's a little played out. I want to see
a Pitt.
I want to see a Max movie. I want to see a Pitt movie.
We need a Spawn first, though. We need something like that to break.
I think
people to do.
No, no, no. What happens is movies like Brightburn need to do so well.
Actually, is Max a movie or is Max a TV show?
It was a TV show, not MTV. I would do TV show.
I think in that, yeah, I think
like a mini, eight episodes, maybe 45 to 55 minutes each episode.
Yeah.
Get really fucking weird with it.
HBO, Netflix, I'm sure. Yeah.
Because like after watching the Umbrella Academy, those kind of shows, Brightburn, I wish did so much better. You need those un-Marvel DC properties to do so well that people go, well, hey, let's look at Image. Because right now, all Image got is Walking Dead, and that's kind of fucking played out. This is zombies.
Very played out.
So they need to go and say, well, what else do they have? Not superhero. Let's go, what's weird over there that we can kind of play with?
But here's the problem, though. You take something like Deadly Class. Deadly Class just got dropped by Sci-Fi.
Oh, did they?
Happy got dropped by Sci-Fi.
Happy only lasted two seasons.
Happy's done too. Now, my understanding is that Deadly Class was actually fairly successful, but because Sony is involved with the production of that, and Sony's going to have their own streaming and all this kind of other bullshit, Sci-Fi doesn't want to have to deal with Sony, and that's one of the reasons why they went ahead and gave Deadly Class the chop. So you got
Did they finish it out, the story, though?
I haven't finished watching them. The funny thing is, I stopped watching on the best episode since the pilot, but life shit just got in the way, and I didn't get to finish it. I thought the pilot was great, and then the successive episodes were kind of too much.
Mandarin.
Very, very, very Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's waste the entire season before we get back into where the first rate ends, or you're not even that, okay? But I really enjoyed the last episode that I watched, which was toward the end. It was a road trip on acid around episode 8 or so. So I can't tell you how it ends because I haven't watched the ending yet. But because it was successful and because they're shopping around in front of their home, that might still continue. But I'm looking at
Netflix being this place where these shows can go and like get that last season out of the way. Hope,
just like Lucifer, I think, is getting
a fifth season to finish it out. Yeah.
I hope that's the case. But the fact is, Happy is not the next Walking Dead. Deadly Class is not the next Walking Dead. Preacher was not the next Walking Dead. And these are costly failures. So there's only so many times at bat before they're like, where's the next Big Bang Theory instead? Because the next Walking Dead isn't working out. You know? That's why I worry. I don't know if you're going to get a Max. You need like Spawn blow up.
You need someone like, God, what's his name? Who did Shaun of the Dead?
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright. To say, you know what? I want to do a Max movie. And it'd be like, well, it's fucking, or even the director. Really the director
of. He does need to do a Superman movie. Superhero movie. I don't care what. He didn't get to do Ant-Man.
You let him do that? Or you get the director from Ragnarok.
Taika Waititi. I think Marvel's going to keep him busy for a while. I don't think he's going to be free anytime soon.
Yeah, that's true.
James Gunn's going to be busy for a while. So Edgar Wright's probably barking at the right tree because he's the one guy.
But what you need is those guys saying, well, while I'm doing this, I have an idea for this movie, this show, and I got someone I think can direct it.
Kind of like James Gunn with Brightburn, since you keep bringing that one up. Is he helped with the script, didn't he? But he didn't direct it.
No, it's his brothers.
Okay.
Yeah, there's...
Was it Sean or is there another Gunn
brother? There's other Gunn brothers, I think.
It's the other brother.
Yeah. And again, the movie's great, but it definitely needed to go through a couple of rewrites to fix some stuff. But it was a great premise.
So it's kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is Joss Whedon's brother and Joss Whedon's brother's wife.
Slither.
Slither was great.
Yeah.
But that was full James Gunn.
Yeah.
This
is Slither-like. It's still in the vein of Slither.
Okay.
There's still moments where I was like, when I was there with Frywood, I was like, fuck. Like, it's been a while since I've said fuck out loud in a theater because something caught me off guard because I just didn't see that.
But that also had a 75% drop from first to second week. So
it's Superman is a serial killer.
I don't think it costs that much.
No, it costs like $6 million. Yeah. So, and it already made its budget back like the first fucking weekend.
So what we need is a nice and expensive Pitt movie.
Yeah.
And that'd be cool.
And again, you could do the special effects
even if, you know, you could do something really cool with Pitt, yeah. I think. And I like reading these comic books, I've been thinking about all these cool things you could do with Pitt. I'd love to see some stuff done with Pitt. I don't have like an enormous affection for the character, but I like the design. I like most of the cast. He could use some villains that are
You could do some really cool shit with him.
But yeah, so you know, at the end of this,
in the right hands,
we've gone through 14 issues of and a bunch of spare stuff on Pitt, and I think at the end of this we've seen that there's value in it.
Yes.
So, let's get to the mail, because we were way fucking overscheduled. We got loving from the 1-8 Sage, Alan Middleton, Alexter Albury, Anime Dangan, Dr. Ann, Articulated Toy Den, Bone Dragon Comics, Cash Flag, Coffee and Comics, Debash, Debbie, Dr. Gene Nerdologist, Ed Moore, El Romero Mero, Firestorm Fan, Gene Hendricks, Guts Last Sword, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, I Was Joe Crawford, James Ad Blobbit, Jason Snicked Venable, Jeffrey Brown, Jennifer DeRock, Justice First Dawn, Liz Roseanne Boswell, Luke H. Brown, Odell Abner Dracula, Professor Frenzy, Professor Harbinger, Rad Adventures Podcast, Randy Caldwell, Raoul Rat, Relatively Geeky, Richard Field, Richard G., Ruth Sutherland, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Siskoid, Stock Porter Super, Talk Nerdy to Me, Warlord World, Xenozoic Xenophiles, and Zach Sally. Richard G. sent us a shy, goofy pic saying, "Thank you all for the mention. Flattered that you feel I give you great content." Odell Abner Dracula wrote, "I left my headphones at work, so instead of learning about Pit while I was shoveling out from this garbage April snowstorm, I listened to thunder and the sound of sleet whipping my face." Luke H. Brown, number 3118, wrote, "Pit looks like The Thing. Casey Jones and Ghost Rider had a love child. I should have said Killer Croc, not The Thing. Lol, me and my big mouth." And then Odell Abner Dracula did a drawing of a paternity claim showing those three characters. Matt can vouch for the quality of Odell Abner Dracula's cartoons for. And then All the Pouches and Image Comics Podcast, hosted by John Wilson, the aforementioned. I like to think of Spawnometer as, if not exactly a sister show, then definitely a friendly cousin. We are on a similar mission with different formats, and they are digging into Morrison and Pitt for their latest episode. And we are still digging into Morrison and Pitt in our latest episode. Still true to this day.
Hey guys, it's Chris and Rob from Step by Step. Rob, say hi.
Hey.
Hi. You could say it. You don't have to whisper. Say
hey.
Too loud.
Hey.
Great. And everyone, we just wanted to just come in and say hello and do a trailer. We've been doing this show for a while, and we decided to put a trailer out. So if you're just starting at the beginning...
Don't.
Well, no, do.
It's different then, though.
Listen to all of the episodes, but the episodes at the beginning are a little different than the episodes currently now.
It's better now.
It's better now, for sure, 100%. Better now, and still not good.
No, not good. It's but not worse good then.
Now. Yeah, it was worse then, but it
listen
is better
listen to
now.
It. We need the clicks, but
none
like...
of it's good. But what I figured is, like, I'm Chris. He's Rob. We're just a couple of guys. You don't know us. You shouldn't have any reason to listen to us. So I figured what I would do is, to get you to know us a little better, we will each tell you a secret about ourselves that we have never told anyone.
Anyone.
And Rob, I don't even know the secret you're going to say. You don't know mine, but we're both going to just throw it out there. It's a little bit of a trust exercise, if you will.
And I'll tell you, I really had to soul search to find what I was going to say today.
That's great. We don't have time to talk about it. But
how long is this trailer?
I don't know. It's going to be short if I can make it. So on the count of three, let's just say a secret, a deep, dark secret.
Okay.
You ready? On the count of three.
One, two, three.
I'm Banksy.
What?
You're Banksy?
No. There's no way.
You can't be Banksy because I'm Banksy.
No, you can't be Banksy because I'm Banksy.
The artist.
Yeah.
The famous artist who does all those graffiti things, I think.
Yeah, the guy who just like sold an art piece for $1 million and then had to go through a shredder.
Yeah, that was me.
That was what? What?
Okay, this
stop
is great.
It.
No. This is not possible. Well, you know what, though?
What?
There have been some Banksys that have been showing up that I didn't do.
And you never questioned this.
No.
Did you think they were counterfeits? If there is a counterfeit Banksy, how do you go and complain to the police? You have to reveal yourself as Banksy.
That's the problem, is that I can't say anything. I see all these Banksys. I have literally done zero of them.
You've done zero Banksys?
Right.
I feel the same way.
You haven't done
any?
I've
been doing all these Banksys, but all the other Banksys I see that are famous and those aren't mine.
But have you been doing them on like walls and stuff in England, or have you been doing them in like a notebook?
A lot of them, I'm taking pictures of Banksy's and then I'm redrawing them in my notebook.
Okay, so we are not Banksy then. Neither of us, I don't think, are Banksy.
We are not. Neither of us are Banksy. There's a couple things we're not. And for those of you two, if you're still listening to this, we're not Banksy and we're not politics. If you're looking for politics, not your podcast.
No, but we should tell them what it is. It's about Step by Step, the show, and it's about Creed, the band, and it's about just life.
Really, honestly, it's just about just two guys.
It's not about just two guys. That's every other podcast. We're about a very specific thing. It's about Creed. It's about Step by Step. That's all we talk about.
And just life.
And I guess life.
Yeah, you said it.
Yeah, I did say that. I kind of regret it, but...
Said it and regret it.
We're not Banksy. Listen to the show, Step by Step, and we love you, really.
I really love you. We just met, but I'm in love with you.
Okay, we gotta go.
Bye.
Step by Step.
Listening to Speech Bubble, the podcast that goes one-on-one with Toronto's comic book luminaries, with your host, Aaron Broverman.
Hey, fan people, welcome to the Speech Bubble. I am your host, Aaron Broverman. You found us on Never Sleeps Network at neversleepsnetwork.com. With me today, we have Richard Pace. He's a journeyman. He's been in comics forever, basically. He worked on The Doom That Came to Gotham. It's a Batman comic with Mike Mignola. And his next book is The Second Coming from Ahoy Comics. But he's worked on a whole bunch of other stuff. Storytellers with Alan Moore. He wrote Pit Crew. Yeah, he did Pit for a while. So he's been around. He's done, you know, Marvel, DC, every major company. Welcome, Richard. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure you have a lot of stories, and I can't wait to get into them. But before we get into what you're currently doing, don't forget to rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast needs met.
You're listening to Never Sleeps Network.
Hey, Jared, I have a question.
What's up?
Well, I've been a part of the Longbox Crusade for about a year and a half now.
Yeah? No, that's not a question, man.
I know, I'm getting to it. That was called build-up. Like I was saying, I've been with the Longbox Crusade, and I have gone out and represented the show faithfully.
That's still not a question.
I'm still building up. I was wondering, could I be a part of the official promo? There's this great promo for the podcast that airs across podcast land, and it has Pat Sampson, the founder of the show, you, the art cell artist, and your brother Jason, a.k.a. Weasel Skull. But it doesn't have me, Delvin Williams. The Dark Web. Could you ask the guys if they would let me be a part of the promotion since you were the one who invited me onto the show?
Well, not to be a Mr. Quick to correct, but that was at least two questions. Still, I guess I'll ask. Let me go talk to the guys and you stay here.
Okay, great. Thanks, man.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, Jared?
What's up, Jared?
I have a question. Delvin's been with us for like a year and a half.
That's not a question.
Yeah, I know. It's called build-up. Hey, can we finally include him on the promo? It's the least we can do. He doesn't know that we're getting paid yet.
And he never will. I mean, we need him. After all, we already have the Longbox Crusade.
And I provide awesome synopsis and insight on Crusader Chronicles.
And I host Saturday Matinee Theater and also provide these nuts jokes.
Hey, I do that.
Me too. So we're fine as it is. What does Delvin do? We should just let him go.
Wait, he hosts Transformers Chronicles. You should know that, Pat. You're on that show. So what do you say? Can we keep him?
Fine, let's do it. Let's do it live! We could have done this with him in the room. It would have made more sense. Why is he outside?
I think we were doing a bit. Okay, let's do this.
The Longbox Crusade Podcast Network is the place to be if you like deep dives into comics of yesteryear with the Longbox Crusade. Chronological reading journals with Crusader Chronicles, indexing forgotten TV shows, films, and serials with Saturday Matinee Theater, pitting two randomly selected action films against one another in Action Film Face-Off, cataloging the Marvel run of the Transformers comic with Transformers Chronicles, and whatever else the demented minds of Pat, Jared, Jason, and Delvin can come up with. If that sounds like it might be for you, be sure to subscribe to The Longbox Crusade on iTunes, Google Play, and pretty much all reputable podcast feeds. Or check us out directly at www.longboxcrusade.com, where we continue our quest to...
This is a fan-produced, not-for-profit podcast. No copyright infringement is intended, and any use of copyrighted materials is believed to be covered under fair use. If you don't agree, you can go straight to hell!